download, Emmy Award-winning writer and comedian Jesse Klein, Digable Planet's frontman Ishmael Butler, and Baseball Prospectus's Joel Reese. And now, here's your host, a man who realizes he ate that Subway sandwich way too fast, Justin Kaufman.
It's true. Thanks, Stephanie. It is true. You know when you get that Subway sandwich, you're like, oh, this is going to be so good. And then you blink your eyes and it's gone? Yeah. I'm feeling a little shame about it. I'm not going to lie. A little guilt. Like, I just ate it too fast. It was too full. You know, I work so hard to keep this Adonis-like body. And then I felt like, you know, in that moment where, and everyone has it, where you're like, where did I put that sandwich? Did I drop it on the floor? And I realized I ate the whole thing. It was a foot long, too. I don't know what that means. Welcome to the download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman with you till 11 o'clock tonight. We've got a great show lined up for you and this probably a horrible commute. The times, at least on 290, 45 minutes, didn't seem to be too bad. But still, with the rain and the inclement weather coming through right now, Chicago, it's going to be a tough commute home. Hopefully you got where you're going. If not, we'll ride shotgun with you till you get there. Drive safe. Of course, terrible weather coming through the area right now. Severe thunderstorms about to hit, looks like it's about to hit downtown Chicago as we look out the window here at Michigan Avenue. And when that sort of that color, we had to turn the lights on like it's December in here. It's always good. Makes you feel good that it's July. But of course, we'll keep you updated on all the weather happenings tonight, especially the storms that are rumbling through the Joliet area. And a little bit more south of Chicago, Rob Martier will have the updates all throughout the show tonight. And we will get you updated on severe weather and if anything happens. 720 WGN is your place to be. All right, tonight on the show, lots to talk about. CPS announced their budgets, and they're similar to what was announced back in February. Cuts, 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 cuts. Mike Fouché from the Daily Line. AlderTrack has been retired. We're on the Daily Line. He's going to join us tonight to talk about what to expect from the budgets that were handed to principals, Chicago Public Schools, and making more with less. Also, a strange day at the Rules Committee meeting at the City Council. Strange, and there's a lot of political ramifications when there's strange days at Rules Committees, I've learned. Honestly, I couldn't tell you a thing that happens in a Rules Committee. But I guess when there's a tie or a protocol is broken, it's a sign that things aren't working. And so we'll talk with Mike Fouché about that coming up here after the news at 7:30. Tonight, my guest, I'm very excited about this. My guest at the big table is Jesse Klein. She's the executive producer and head writer for the show Inside Amy Schumer on Comedy Central. Great show. Just finished up their fourth season. Amy Schumer, obviously a huge hit. Jesse Klein has a lot to do with that, being the head writer behind that sketch comedy show that you could see on Comedy Central. She's a former writer on SNL, and she wrote a new book called You'll Grow Out of It. It's essentially about growing up and growing old and making her transition into adulthood. She's 40, so she had to sort of grow up. So we talked to her about her comedic essays, which borderline on memoir, but it's really interesting about the first time she was called ma'am. It was Miss up to a certain point and then turned to ma'am and how she's internalized that. There's some great stuff about beauty in Hollywood, how you grow old and stay beautiful. One, be a supermodel. Two, if you're rich, wear rich stuff. Three, if you're neither of those two things, you have to be eccentric. You have to wear a cool hat or crazy tights. That's beauty in America at this place. So we'll talk with Jesse Klein coming up at 8 o'clock. Do you like Amy Schumer, Pete? Are you an Inside Amy Schumer fan?
Yeah, of course.
The season they won the Emmy for was the season they did the 12 Angry Men episode.
Yeah.
Did you see that one? That's one of the best. It's what I really like about Amy Schumer. She's a tremendous stand-up, and she's funny, and she deserves everything she gets. But the creativity that and the risks and the way she was moving with the show to really try some great groundbreaking stuff on television. If you haven't seen the show, it's worth a look. I would say season two, season three are the ways to go. But 12 Angry Men is essentially a parody of the play where 12 jurors, black and white, cameos, all stars, they play the jurors, they go into the jury room to decide whether or not Amy Schumer's hot enough to be on TV. And the whole episode, it's a sketch show, so it's usually three-minute sketches, they move on. But the whole episode was about this. It was a great sort of diversion for that program. And I was like, this is great. This is awesome comedy, and Jesse Klein and Amy Schumer behind that. So that's great. So we'll talk to her about that. Also coming up tonight, Diggable Planets. Are you cool like that? Cool like that. Boom, 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 boom. Diggable Planets can join us to talk about the reunion tour, the hip-hop group that is considered tremendously influential, groundbreaking even. 1993 put out Rebirth of Slick. This was where they're taking hip-hop in more of a jazzy, improvised direction. And they broke up in the mid-90s, and they were out of circulation for a couple of decades, and they just reunited, and they're going to be a part of Pitchfork Music Festival. We continue our Pitchfork series, presenting interviews and performances from people who are going to be performing at that festival this weekend. So Diggable Planets, Ishmael Butler, Butterfly. I love this guy. That was great. Tremendous, tremendous hip-hop group. So we'll talk with them about reuniting. And what I want to know, Pete, I mean, it's kind of interesting, is that the people who are interested in Diggable Planets, a reunion, they would be my age.
Yeah.
Right? 41 yep. years old. You know, you would be interested in a Diggable Planets reunion.
Right.
We're not, and we talked with Chris Caskey about this. I'm not putting down Pitchfork in any form, but the Pitchfork Music Festival plays to a substantial amount of older people, but the core of that festival is a music-going festival, which is younger kids.
Mm-hmm.
19, 20, 21. I told you last year I went to Pitchfork, and I saw a friend's daughter kind of sneaking through the crowd, and I was like, and I didn't say anything because I'm like, what is that going to be? That's going to be like, hi, Mr. Kaufman.
Yeah.
Hey, yeah, I'm cool too. We're both cool. And I was like, that's what you're getting at Pitchfork, right? So, hey,
Justin, I'm sorry. Yeah, can I jump in here real quick?
Please,
yeah,
please,
just
please.
National Weather Service, severe thunderstorm warning now for all of Cook County. This thunderstorm warning, excuse me, will remain in effect until 8 o'clock.
All right, there you go. Rob Martier will be checking back in with any warnings that come across the wire. You just said thunderstorm warnings throughout Cook County until 8 o'clock. You can see it, too, as here comes the rumble, the lightning.
Rolling in.
And the thunder in the background here in Michigan Avenue. Anyway, the point being that who is Diggable Planets is going to is a reunion tour. So for them to yank out some of their tunes from 1993 and 1994, is that audience going to know any of that music? And how do you do that?
A lot of them haven't been born or
right?
hadn't been born, yeah.
I mean, are they even going to know that song? I mean, maybe they will.
Yeah, I think, you know, you're dealing with a bit more savvy of a listener who may try to go back and learn, but
right.
I'd say the majority will not know who they are, but just, you know, like keen interest when the schedule comes out, like, who is this band? Who is this new band?
They migrate to one stage because they hear the bass. Doom, doom, doom. They're like, oh, what's that? And then they hear guitar, and they're like, oh, what's that over there? That's really what the Pitchfork audience does. I need a place to lay down. Also coming up tonight, we're going to talk with Joel Reese from Baseball Prospectus Wrigleyville. He's going to be our guest tonight on Picnic. We're giving legitimate, authentic nicknames to the 2016 Chicago Cubs because they need it. Tonight, we thought since it's the All-Star break that we would go to the management and brass, Theo Epstein and Joe Madden. What do you think of that?
Uh-huh.
Theo Epstein and Joe Madden. We give nicknames to Cubs players and coaches for prizes. We'll give away, I think we have stuff to give away tonight. So the winners will get something.
Yeah, we'll have prizes.
Yeah. So all that's coming up here in the download, including a very interesting city artscape that's happening tomorrow night called Scentscape. Scentscape. It's essentially they're going to take over an alleyway down here, not too far from the studios, and sort of create a scent-based art exhibit in an alleyway. We're going to talk about that coming up in the 9 o'clock hour. It's just about activating spaces in Chicago that aren't used for what they are, for arts and culture. So we'll talk about that coming up as well in the 9 o'clock hour. News, weather, and traffic with Rob Martier and Esmeralda Leon. And like I said, Rob's going to break in whenever we have any sort of weather updates. Production provided by Pete Zimmerman. I'm Justin Kaufman, and this is The Download, a show about Chicago starring those who know it well. We'll take a break. We'll come back. We'll do the carryout. Stay with us. Let's do the carryout. This, of course, is our nightly segment where I read the news, so you at home, you don't have to. Here are today's top stories. The Illinois Republican Party is scrambling to find enough delegates for the upcoming Republican National Convention. Several delegates have pledged themselves to Trump and then said, meh, I think I'll golf at home. Paging Alan Keyes, anybody? Where's Alan Keyes? We need him. He's like GOP Batman. Secretary Clinton's in the area today having a fundraising dinner with Cubs co-owner Laura Ricketts. Laura, ask her about the Yankees hat. Clinton spent the earlier part of the day in Springfield. Wow. A politician in Springfield in July? That's like a rare bird sighting. Clinton went on to tell the crowd that Donald Trump was turning the GOP from the party of Lincoln to the party of Trump, which, you know what, I'm okay with. I mean, have you seen a Trump party? Lots of hors d'oeuvres passed out by women in bikinis, 80s hairstyles on a boat, a yacht with merengue. I mean, come on, that's a party I can believe in. CPS gave principals their budget today, and the cuts from February are still intact. CPS Chief Forrest Claypool said that we have to learn to do more with less. Has he ever been to a CPS classroom? I mean, that's been scrawled on the banner since 1977. Maybe they could take that banner down and repurpose it for paper or pens or something like that. The Field Museum found a new dinosaur. The Field Museum found a new dinosaur. It's like a smaller T-Rex. It was found in Patagonia in 2007. Why did it take 9 years to announce the finding? Because 9 years is like 3 months in dinosaur. Anyway, small T-Rex just in time for Christmas. Cleveland businesses are excited about the convention coming to town, including strip clubs, who usually get a nice bump when political conventions come through. Although, according to the Daily Beast, the clubs are worried about protesters. Actually, protesters should stop blocking traffic and start blocking strip clubs. That will get a politician's attention. In theater news, the Chicago cast of Hamilton has been announced. Some serious Broadway talent will perform in the show. Some Tony Award winners. No one from the original cast, though. I think it should be an all-Chicago cast. First up, Brian Dennehy as Alexander Hamilton. Just think of the rapping alone. My name is Alexander Hamilton. I'm here to say, let's have some fun and win this war. And then like 8 minutes of tap and then 10 minutes of John Wayne Gacy. The new Ghostbusters movie is getting pretty bad reviews, including here on WGN from Richard Roper. He cites problems with the script, the acting, the design, the special effects. Even the cameos suck. Supporters are quick to point out that the movie is indeed bad, but not because the cast is all female. Women can be bad in terrible movies, too. We've come a long way. In weather, I told you, it's stormy. Severe weather warnings throughout the night. In sports, low ratings for the All-Star game, maybe because people don't want to watch the Cubs. I'm just throwing it out there. Too many Cubs. Maybe put a limit on how many Cubs can be in the game. Now the second half begins on Friday, which sucks for me because I'm addicted to fantasy baseball. So what do I do for like the next 3 days? Nothing? Pay attention to my family? Ugh. God. No, I need to know what Ben Zobrist is doing. The Cubs are in first place still. They got a 7-game lead over the Pirates and the Cardinals. Sox, 7 games back, but hovering close to the AL wild card. Will either team make a move to bolster the lineups before the trading deadline at the end of the month? Rumors have Andrew Miller, Aroldis Chapman, Ryan Braun, and the entire Atlanta Braves lineup available. The Blackhawks convention's this weekend as fans get a chance to mingle and get some stuff signed by the stars. I like what the Blackhawks have done this season. By that, I mean I like that they didn't go deep into the playoffs. Took a nice break, got to see some family, go fishing, sell some condos. They're going to be fresh and ready to skate come October. You watch. The Bulls Summer League is underway. Denzel Valentine has shined, but then again, so did Doug McDermott, so really doesn't mean anything. In football, the Bears are worth $2.5 billion. I'm assuming most of that comes from the markup on Zubas. You ever tried to buy a pair of Zubas? They're like 30 bucks. Huh? Also, are taxpayers still paying for Soldier Field? I'm asking for a friend. And finally tonight, a Cicero man was arrested for burglarizing cars in the near west suburb of Riverside. Why'd he do it? To pay for his pizza habit. Ah, that's what they're calling crystal meth these days. Pizza. Can't wait to have my pepperoni pizza that I make in my chemistry lab in the back trailer of my farm. That's the carryout for July 13th. Speaking of crystal meth, hey, we've got Crystal Pepsi. It's similar. It's not? Well, it's still $4. Coming up on this rainy Wednesday night, Mike Fouché is going to be in from the Daily Line to talk about the CPS budgets that were released to principals today. The cuts are still there, so what's it mean for you and your family? That's coming up here in 720 WGN. Stay with us. All right, it's download here on WGN Radio.
What happened to the Return of the Mac music? Man?
I thought that was a one-off thing. I thought
we did it twice.
We did?
Yeah.
I think it was twice because it was like you were on twice.
Yeah, well.
Like in the same week.
So I got to come up with something new? I'm stuck with New Edition?
New Edition's good. What's wrong with New Edition?
I want to go get a fade.
you need a fade, my friend. Mike Fouché, the man behind the dailyline.com, is in studio with us for a regular segment. Used to be AlderTrack, now dailyline.com. Congrats on the name change.
Dot
it's
net.
Happened. It's done. Dot net?
The dailyline.net.
The dailyline.net. Sorry yeah. about that.
Dot com is like some Malaysian thing. I don't even know what it is.
Yeah, it costs so much money.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right, so let's get to it. It doesn't matter. All right, let's talk about CPS budgets. Now, the CPS budgets, when you say that the CPS budgets were released, what that means is that principals at schools throughout Chicago were given their individual budgets today.
Right. So they go through a whole process, right? There's the overall budget for the school system, and they have this huge lump sum, and then they report to the individual principals how much money they get. And so first off, I want to put off a pet peeve here. Forrest Claypool, for some reason, always has his press conferences in some school somewhere. You know, come on, man. Do it downtown.
Yeah.
That's where we're at.
That's where all the media's at.
And there's like, and it was, you know, it was supposed to be cool that he's standing around a bunch of small desks. What isn't even that today? He was in an empty classroom. What's the deal? Nobody's there. You got nothing. Okay. Stop that, Forrest Claypool, please. But anyway, so they have a press conference in this school at 47th and something or other, and the big news is all of the schools are going to be fully funded. I'm not going to say fully funded. There's not going to be any teacher layoffs.
Okay, so that's the positive takeaway.
There's no teacher layoffs. School's going to start on time. And the other big news is that special education programs are fully funded.
Those are all good things. And obviously the teacher layoffs and the school starting on time has to be good things for the teachers union who are working. I mean, have they responded or do they see this as some sort of a positive in terms of negotiations?
Well, there's a couple of things to talk about here. The first is that they would not release the individual school budgets to us, the press. They just said, that's what's going to happen. And at 5 p.m. today, all of the principals are supposed to be receiving their individual school budgets. So there's a lot of stuff, devil's in the details, okay? So, you know, one of the things is schools might have to share an art teacher. They might have to share a gym teacher. So
CPS Maine is like, hey, everything's good, fully funded.
Right.
5 o'clock, go home, and then we're going to drop off these budgets on the front porch.
Right,
and,
right.
Hopefully the media will go to sleep.
Don't call your principal right now because he or she is freaking out.
Right.
So, I mean, you know, that's the first thing. The other thing is that CPS still has about a $350 million hole that they have to fill. That they don't have all the money for that. And where is this going to come from? Well, CPS has now the ability to raise property taxes. So they could do it all with property taxes. But they're probably not. And what Rahm Emanuel has continually said is this whole idea of a weirdo three-way handshake. I don't know how that works. But the state kicks in some money, which they've already done. Number two, taxpayers have to kick in some money. So we know that there's going to be a property tax increase of some amount. And number three, the unions are going to have to make some kind of concessions.
So that's where he's putting a lot of emphasis on concessions.
That's exactly right.
All right. So what I thought was interesting is that there was a lot of talk about the February cuts, and we were on the show in February, right, talking about when Forrest Claypool and CPS really just started to gut, yep, as much as they possibly could.
Yep.
Now, that was in expectation that they weren't going to be able to get the money.
That stuff is not restored.
So now it's not coming back.
No, it's not coming back.
Is there criticism to the fact that that's not coming back?
The teachers union has been very quiet. And I think that actually is because they know that they've got some negotiating to do and they've got to figure out exactly what's going to happen. You know, they have actually changed their tune in a lot of ways. And I think what's interesting is that the teachers union really got very far behind Mike Madigan in this last election cycle to do everything they could for him. And I think Mike Madigan has delivered in a lot of ways by bringing money to the city schools. And I'm going to bet that there's going to be some other things that are going to come along. And I'm guessing that, you know, that means that they're buying their silence to some extent. I don't know. Nobody's told me.
Well, I mean, it's funny because we think of summertime and the negotiation with schools. But, you know, with CPS, we're already into mid-July here. That gives a month and change, really a month and a half, until schools start back up in the citywide. So it's not a lot of time to get to the table and negotiate.
Really, effectively, this whole thing has got to be sealed up in 3 weeks. So there's a lot of stuff that's going to be happening behind the scenes in the meantime. You know, and so now I think we know what the facts are. And I think that we're going to begin hearing the real deal in the next few weeks. And we're probably going to hear about a big property tax increase, you know, sometime in August when everybody's on vacation. So, you know, that'll be cool. That'll be cool. Come back.
Okay, it's the other story in CPS, which was a big story this week, was really scrutinizing Mayor Daley and CPS for capital.
Emanuel.
What did I say?
Daley.
I did?
Yeah, you did.
Wow, I didn't Oh, my gosh.
We have to remember he's the kindly grandfatherly figure.
Oh, my gosh. No,
now.
I know, there's
just
a
rolled
reason.
Off the tongue.
It did.
Bam. Yeah.
Wow.
It's like he's still there.
He's just all around me.
Yeah, I know.
Wow. I apologize, WGN listeners. I can't believe I did
Rahm Emanuel.
Rahm Emanuel, of course. Mayor Emanuel.
MRE.
And don't start with the initial.
Yeah.
All right. Mayor Emanuel and CPS get a lot of scrutiny over the capital projects about expanding, possibly building on some schools that are overcrowded in the city of Chicago.
Right.
But in most cases, and reports came out that most of these schools that are getting the expansions and annexes and these capital projects are schools with middle class to upper class,
well-to-do
white
communities.
Backgrounds, well-to-do communities.
They tend to be white.
And there's a pushback saying, why aren't you expanding? We're overcrowded and we're at capacity all across the city.
Right.
Why not spread the love a little bit and give some minority communities or other communities that don't have well-off a lot of money involved and get them in the business?
So, you know, when you go look at a house in a nice neighborhood in Chicago, oftentimes what it says in the listing is in the Coonley School District. Or in the Skinner
Bell.
West School District, or the Bell School District, or, you know, whatever it is. And that is a major selling point. It's a major selling point, and it has a lot to do with property values. Because if it's a great or pretty good public school, that means those parents aren't going to have to shell out a whole bunch more money every year in order to send their kids to private school. So that makes it more likely that you're going to be able to sell that house for a lot of money. So CPS has got this problem where they have an extremely political issue about what the lines are for each elementary school. If you move the lines for an elementary school, that means some group of people are getting their property values whacked in a huge way. And so what's happened is that you have these schools like Waters Elementary or Skinner West or other places like that that have very, very high property values in those areas. And if they move the line, then there's a whole bunch of people that are going to scream. Those schools are already at like 110, 120%
capacity. Exactly, and I can't speak for Waters, but I know Skinner West. But the concept being that there's also a selective enrollment part of that school.
Yeah, okay, so Skinner West,
But
if you live in the neighborhood, you
get to
go to the
school. For free,
right.
And there's always a tug and a push and a pull when it comes to selective enrollment versus neighborhood.
Right.
But in any case, a lot of the reports were like, well, why not take that selective enrollment and put it somewhere else.
Right.
And essentially,
right,
the argument was being made that this is almost forcing, in a way, segregation.
Right. And that's absolutely true. So you have a school that's right next door that maybe has, you know, 50 or 60% utilization. They've got a lot of room, but it's in a lot less desirable neighborhood. And, you know, people that the nice school already has a great marketing component. Everybody thinks is in the neighborhood thinks it's wonderful. And they moved in that neighborhood in order to send their kids there. And if CPS all of a sudden says, sorry, you're going to go to the school in the less desirable neighborhood, number one, it's probably going to affect their property values. And number two, these parents now have a responsibility where they're going to have to start building their kids up or building the school up. I've actually heard that, you know, CPS is very seriously thinking, well, we're going to cap at a particular grade. You know, in a couple of years, what we're going to have to do is everybody in that school is going to have to go to a different adjacent school.
Right, right.
Or they'll do something where they'll say, well, 1 through 5 is going to stay in this elementary school, and we're going to scrape off 6 to 8 and put it in a different building because they've got plenty of space. You know, that's all been hearsay. But those are the kind of things that I think CPS is discussing.
Yeah, it's interesting, and it's definitely one of the bigger issues of our time when it comes to the idea of public schools and what's available to the haves and the have-nots when it comes to our public education.
Yeah.
I mean, that's really what at the bottom of this argument, it's about why are you expanding this school when there's no funds being put into this school?
Right.
And it continues in the city, and it's something that you can't really peg on Mayor Emanuel and CPS right now because they've been doing it
for a long time.
Decades.
But at some point, CPS is going to have to say, sorry.
Yeah.
You know, we're going to cut a line here, and these people are going to have to go to a different school. There's really no way about it, way around it. And, you know, oh boy. I mean, I have a kid in CPS. I'm probably going to be dealing with it myself.
Mike Fouché from thedailyline.net is in studio with us. We'll take a quick break. We'll come back and talk about chaos at the Rules Committee.
Chaos with a K.
There we go. Stay with us. It's a download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman. In studio with me, Mike Fouché. Mike is the man behind thedailyline.net. All right, City Council Rules Committee. This is nerdy stuff. This is nerdy stuff, but it has impact. Talk about that.
All right, so City Council has a thing called Rules Committee, right? So everything that they want to totally control goes to Rules Committee. The chair of Rules Committee is Michelle Harris from the 8th Ward.
Sure.
She has been carrying water for a long time. She's been a good soldier for everything. And so the thing that they're putting through Rules Committee is this. This is so crazy. You know, every year at the very bottom of the ballot or every election at the bottom of the ballot, there's a bunch of referendum questions,
sure,
right? And they're all
liquor on Sundays, right?
Bogus.
That kind of stuff.
They're all really kind of lame stuff. Are you in favor of not punching people in the head? You know, yes, no. It's that kind of stuff. And the reason why it's on there is that state law says you can have up to 3 referenda on the ballot. And they can either go on in for every jurisdiction. So Chicago can have 3 referenda on the ballot. And so one way to put them on is that city council votes them in. The other way to put them on is that people collect signatures and
petition,
put it on,
right?
They petition.
The Pat Quinn version, right.
So it just so happens that there's a group of people led by SEIU that want to put a referendum on that would be a vote on whether or not the airports should be broken off into a separate government body that would not be controlled by the mayor.
This is something that we've talked about before. There's been a protest movement
almost
in a weird way, punish the mayor from all his political fallout and take away the airport.
And the argument is that already the airports are totally clouded and there's a lot of corruption in there. We should create its own agency.
Like a lot of places do.
New York
has.
That is governed by a separate elected group of people. Well, Mayor Emanuel doesn't like that idea. And neither do the city council members because, you know, they get to use it for contracts
airports,
and stuff like
that.
They like to control that stuff. It's a nice big sack of cash that they can use for things. So these guys on city council are scrambling to come up with a bunch of different things to put on the referendum. And so they thought they had their 3. They thought they had their 3. And
so they're stuffing it, essentially, so you can't get the airport thing on there.
That's exactly
that's
right. They thought they had
Chicago
their 3.
Politics,
and last month, they were like, yeah, we got our 3. And then it turns out that one of them, which was going to – it's too much detail, but it was on immigration.
It fell through.
The immigration community were like, no way, man. You can't do that. It's a terrible idea. So council's like, oh, no. What are we going to do? We're going to come up with a 3rd thing. And so the 3rd thing that they came up with is, should Chicago spend money on roads? Dude, I mean, that's right up there with should I punch you in the face?
They did
yes,
that.
No.
And really, the only reason they did it was to block the airport.
In order to put, yes,
what?
Exactly.
That's
and
awesome.
So it's
not awesome.
This is what's incredible about city council is that the management of city council has become so ham-fisted that there's the mayor's people and the folks on council are completely crosswise with one another, and they're not really managing stuff, that they get this thing and it comes up on Tuesday where they're like, all right, we're going to have this vote on whether or not Chicago and the state should spend money on roads. And people on the council, on the committee, they get it at the last minute. They get this ordinance and they look at it and they go, this is dumb. You know, this is a really dumb idea. I don't know why we're having anything like this. And actually, Scott Wagaspeck said, yeah, we should add in that we want to get money from the Galactic Council as well in order to spend money on roads. Like, you know, people were just busting on it.
I was going to ask the question, the follow-up is, do aldermen or critics, are they crying foul? Or are they like, come on,
yeah,
put the airport down.
Yeah, yeah. So it goes to a vote. And, you know, usually the stuff, what happens is the chair's like, all right, we're going to have a vote. All in favor say aye, and then it goes through. All right, it's all by voice vote. But no, so two people actually said we want a roll call, and so that if somebody calls for a roll call and it's seconded, you got to do it. She couldn't gavel it. Michelle Harris couldn't gavel it through, and so they had a roll call vote, and the roll call vote ended up being a tie, 7-7, and that if you get a tie, it's a no pass. You got to have 50%
plus one.
So
what does that mean?
So that means that it didn't pass, and they didn't come up with a referendum in order to jam the thing.
So
Michelle Harris says, well, we're going to have another rules committee meeting right before next Wednesday's council meeting. We'll have it at like 9 a.m. So they'll try and come up with something else and jam it through at the last minute. If they don't manage to get it through, that's going to leave an empty slot because the next council meeting isn't until I think right after the deadline for signatures.
So that means that it would just be empty.
It would be empty, and it means that there's a possibility of these guys putting in the airport referendum.
They would have to put that through committee, that airport referendum.
No. They get the signatures, and they
if
turn
they get
in
the signatures,
board of elections,
then there's no vote anyway.
That's right.
Wow.
It's not dealt by council.
So the best part, next week, you got to remind us at the beginning of the show, when you're on next Wednesday, what was the referendum item that they chose
that they
at 9 a.m.? What they got through.
Should I be punched in the face? Yes, no. I'm very excited to see that one. I think there's a lot of potential for it. It would be probably the best vote ever. But you know, this is what this sort of thing never, ever, ever, ever happened before. And this is what's really exciting to us nerds, is that this is an incredible illustration of how city council is changing rapidly. The fact that rules
meaning
committee
before it was pushed
doesn't
right
have
through.
This iron control,
right.
That there's actually debate and people are fighting over these sort of things is really amazing.
It is amazing.
Yeah,
it's government at work. The
so
city
all we
that
need
works.
Is for somebody to come up with something that matters.
So right,
in order to fight about.
Yeah, exactly.
Right, that'd be exciting.
this is just the beginning.
Right,
Mike Fouché, thedailyline.net. Next week is convention time, the Republican National Convention.
Yeah,
you and I remember we were together in 2008 at the DNC in Denver.
Yeah.
So next week we talk about the RNC and who's going, who's not, the DNC, all that kind of stuff.
Good
next
times.
Week. All right, Mike. Thanks for being here.
Good being here.
Welcome back to The Download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman. Coming up in the 9 o'clock hour tonight, we're going to talk with the Digable Planets.
Ooh.
They're in town for Pitchfork, the music festival this weekend. We're going to talk with Ishmael Butler, Butterfly from Digable Planets.
I saw them play in college.
That's what I want to talk to him about the idea of who's going to be at Pitchfork. And that idea of the reunion tour. I mean, they're playing festivals all around the country, and we will talk with Ishmael Butler coming up in the 9 o'clock hour. Well, my next guest tonight is writer and comedian Jesse Klein. Klein is a stand-up comedian and former writer for SNL and current head writer and executive producer for Inside Amy Schumer on Comedy Central. She's an Emmy and Peabody Award winner. Her new book is called You'll Grow Out of It, and it's a collection of comedic essays and insights about her life, from tales of relationships, good and bad, transitioning from Miss to Ma'am, and her journey from tomboy to Tom Man.
Well, it was great being on. Thanks. Bye.
It's a great book about growing up and growing older. Jesse Klein will be at Anderson's Bookshop at the Standard Club, 320 South Plymouth Court, tomorrow at noon for reading and signing. But tonight, Jesse Klein is my guest at the big table. Jesse, nice to meet you. Great book.
Thank you. I'm so excited to be here.
Did you set out? I've read places, you know, the idea of writing a book wasn't necessarily what first came up, but it's not necessarily a memoir.
Yeah, I didn't think of it as a memoir while I was writing it at all. I kind of just thought it was sort of observational, some observations, a smattering of recollections. Yeah, I certainly wouldn't. I didn't think like, oh, I'm going to sit down and tell everyone the very important story of capital M, my capital L life. But yeah, I guess if people see it as a memoir, that's
okay. I mean, it's a relatable book in the sense that it's about becoming an adult. It's really about that transition that we all have to make into adulthood, which
ideally
is, some people, it's supposed to happen a lot younger, but
run around it,
right.
But generally you got to do it.
But that seems to be what the overall focus of the essays and the recollections, smatterings of recollections, is about, the idea of coming to grips with growing older and becoming an adult.
Yeah. I mean, I think that process is easier for some than others. I think it's probably challenging at different times for everybody.
Was it difficult for you as a comedian and in your stand-up, you're very open. I mean, there's a, you know, there's not a subject you're not going to take on.
Not
right?
Super coy.
No, you're going to go right at
no,
it.
No, not a real mystery.
But I mean, is it a different kind of emotion to write your stories and tell the personal stories that are in this book? Because there's a lot about breakups and the emotion around it. There's a lot about your insecurities. There's a lot about your personal life, about trying to get pregnant and childbirth. Talk about the range of emotions to put this on paper.
Yeah. You know, one of the things, I mean, there's certainly parts of writing a book. I mean, it takes a long time for me anyway. I am a very slow writer because there's the internet to look at, and that takes a lot of my day and night. But one of the things that was nice about it and that I enjoyed in the process of writing was, you know, when you're writing a book, you can kind of go off on these tangents that are, you know, not necessarily, it's not like being on stage where you feel really pressured to try to like get to a laugh.
Right.
And even though my stand-up, I'm not, you know, I'm not such a joke teller so much as I'm a storyteller. Still in the book, I felt like, oh, I, you know, in my personal life, things that I take in, I skew towards like an indie dramedy. I like all of the feelings, not just the funny ha-ha ones. And I was like, excited to share those.
Well, I mean, the book affords that. I mean, the ability to put this stuff on paper and to be able to go to that intimate moment and then be able to almost talk about the lesson that you learned from it, that stuff that's not afforded to you being on stage in a 15-minute set or a 10-minute set.
Yeah. I just felt like it was a nice opportunity to share some stuff that's a little, not necessarily more painful. Some of it is, but you know, I think like we all have those things in our lives that are painful and embarrassing, and we almost always feel like there's some aspect of it that only we are feeling, and kind of yearn to know that someone else might be feeling it. And I think the more you feel that I'm the only one who feels this, or I'm the only one who's this embarrassed, the more there is certainly many people who are feeling what you're feeling.
Well, it's definitely relatable. I don't know about trying to hook up with the Disney character. I haven't done
that.
Oh, really?
But no. That's not what I've heard.
That's not what I've heard. Yeah. So, but it is relatable. I mean, the concepts in the book are concepts, whether it be about insecurities, about relationships, or even just the concept of growing older, that can resonate with everybody. It's not just one gender or another.
Yeah.
It just really
seems we're all going to die.
Yeah.
Oh, we're all flaming out. Everyone in this room right now is just really decaying.
We're all gonna
die. Yeah. Sure. I mean, for sure, I think I did write about some things that are specific to being a lady person. But, you know, guys have their own stuff and their own challenges as well.
There's a big chapter towards the end about comedy, about getting into comedy,
yeah,
and just about your life, you know, making a transition from writer, stand-up comedian to, you know, continuing to work in Hollywood. To me, I felt like to be a microcosm of the whole book, this idea of trying to get up on stage and getting over some of your insecurities and the idea of sitting in. There's a great point where you talk about 1 o'clock in the morning in a New York bar in a concrete basement on a chair, and you're like,
yeah,
what am
Blair
I
doing?
Yeah, you're like, what am I doing here? What I'm doing with my life?
Yeah, a lot of comedy when you start out is very much the end of Blair Witch, where it's just one person facing the wall, the other person, God knows what's happening to them, and yeah, it's horrifying. I mean, my path. I hope that the story is relatable outside of comedy insofar as, you know, I was just really scared to do something creative and to take a risk. When I got out of college, I sort of fell into, purposely fell, but I kind of lucked out into temping at Comedy Central.
Right, right.
Just lucked out in that placement. And then I was like, ooh, I love watching Comedy Central, and I'd always loved comedy, but it didn't seem like a thing that anyone could do. I think now it's, you know, with UCB and YouTube, and it seems much more attainable. But this was, I guess, like mid-90s. That still wasn't a part of it. And I had a job there in development at Comedy Central, and I had a paycheck. And I was, you know, raised in sort of a very humble economic situation. Both my parents worked for the city. I didn't know anybody who worked in entertainment, and I had these kind of secret little yearning, feeling, cravings to do something. But for a million reasons that I think lots of people feel, it just felt like kind of selfish to do something where right. I wasn't assured of any kind of economic return, let alone success of any kind. And I kind of hid in this job that felt close to
right.
creativity.
Right.
I think that's also something that people don't talk about a ton. I feel like there's some book that like created the term shadow artist for that, where you're just like, I'm close.
I'm around it. I'm adjacent.
Well,
it's hard. It's hard. You have a job. You're close to the industry that you want to be in.
Yeah.
You're getting a paycheck.
There's no shame in it. And, you know, it just, for me, I think there was a whole other psychic mechanism going on around the idea of risk too.
Yeah.
Related to just family stuff. And, it took me years to kind of just one toe in the bath of just slowly trying. And then finally, I kind of had to really let go of the idea of the safety of a paycheck. And it's really hard.
We're talking with Jesse Klein. She's a writer and comedian. She's the current head writer and executive producer for Inside Amy Schumer, Emmy and Peabody Award winner. Her new book, You'll Grow Out of It, is out now. She'll be signing it and speaking at the Standard Club tomorrow, the Anderson's Bookshop at the Standard Club. Great place, 320 South Plymouth Court in the South Loop. Tonight she's my guest here. We'll take a break. We'll come back. We'll continue the conversation. Stay with us. Welcome back to The Download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman, and my guest tonight, Jesse Klein, writer and comedian. She's the author of You'll Grow Out of It, a collection of comedic essays and insights. She will be speaking and signing the book at Anderson's Bookshop at the Standard Club, 320 South Plymouth Court, tomorrow at noon. She's my guest tonight at the big table. All right, we have to talk about Tomboy versus Tom Man. This is your invention, Tom Man.
Yes.
You grew up as a tomboy.
I did. I was a classic, a real classic tomboy. I didn't, skirts, no thanks. Dresses, no thanks. Anything that like was very typically girly to do, I just was like, oh, that's a hard pass for me. Why would I like have something that you could see my underwear? I want to just be in my pants.
And that continued through college.
I'm sitting here in a dress right now by force because I was just on TV. But the minute I am in my hotel room, I am getting back into my union suit. I just have always been, I just like to be comfortable.
And a lot of the book is about that transition as you made that transition to adulthood and how you kind of had to fight to either keep that or change because of the forces in society when it comes to women and beauty and all the kind of things around it. So talk about that trying to stay a Tom Man.
In some ways, I think I at a certain point was like, I really got to get out of this Tom Man thing. The idea of like a tomboy growing it, he was like, oh, that's a cute thing. And then, but Tom Mann sort of sounds ugh, like no one's like, oh, how cute. I wore a backpack until I was 30. And then one day I was meeting one of my best friends at a bar, and I didn't have a purse. I just had like a big maroon backpack, you know, for my stuff. And I met my friend and I walked up to her. She was at the bar and I I put my backpack on the ground, and she looked at me, and she said in the way that only like a loving friend will say, she's like, Jess, your backpack's hurting
my
feelings.
It's hurting my feelings.
Yeah. I think at a certain point, I mean, I did start to feel kind of attracted to trying out some, you know, typical girl stuff. I wear makeup. I do now own dresses and shirts that I wear of my own volition.
But that's, that's a big part of the book as well, is just this concept of beauty and the industry around it. I mean, there's a lot that goes in. There's a whole thing about growing older and the difference between, you know, what you can be to get away with beauty, a supermodel or eccentric, I think that's what it is. Like.
Well, yeah, it's like how women, there's like only a few paths for women in aging. It's like having observed, like, okay, well, I hope one day I get to be 75 years old. And like, how are women allowed to be old? And it seems like you're either just like someone who is born a supermodel and stays one, so that's a kind of a limited door, or you are rich and you wear your money,
right?
Or if neither of those are open to you, you're just an eccentric and you wear like a big hat,
glasses,
and like crazy tights. Yeah. That's definitely gonna be me. I hope, yeah, for sure.
Well, I mean, you have a couple chapters that are sort of associated to beauty and growing older, but you talk a little bit about, at the core of it, women are either wolves or poodles.
Uh-huh.
And there's a whole chapter about this. It's interesting
yes.
to me, but the idea that there's poodles and wolves, explain.
Poodles, wolves, go forwards.
The clock is ticking.
Sure. Well, this came out of when I was at SNL, I was wandering the halls one night, and I ran into this other writer, fabulous lady named Emily Spivey, and I think she would admit neither of us looked or felt our best. And there was a TV on, and Angelina Jolie was on, and we were just staring at her. And I think Emily was one who said, are we the same species as her?
Right.
Like, I know on paper we are. And I was like, yeah, it's like the way a wolf is technically kind of the same animal as a toy poodle. Like, they're kind of dogs,
right,
but they have nothing to do with each other. And then I was like, so some women are like poodles and some women are wolves. Angelina Jolie, full poodle. And I am a full wolf. And it's kind of a silly metaphor, but what I'm trying to express with it is, like, I think for some women, the poodles, there is this relationship to their own femininity that feels very effortless. And it's just like those women who, no matter what they're wearing, they just always kind of exude this like ease with being a woman. And I have been in more than one situation where I thought I might have to call the police to help me out of Spanx because I was stuck. And I am not kidding. It happened to me the other day. I was like, I might need a scissor. And that's when you're a wolf.
That's when you're a wolf.
That's
and
when you're a wolf.
You kind of talked about...
And one is not better than the other.
Right. There's also an anecdote in the book about when you bought a dress and you went on the subway. And, you were just as great. I'm going to walk past the people are going to turn heads.
Yeah.
And then there was a woman who came out
a
poodle who was not dressed up, who
no.
was just, you know, as dressed down as you can be. And everyone gravitated towards the
poodle. Yeah. She was just, she had that poodle thing going on. Yeah. I thought I looked bananas good and was ready to just like, you know, fend men off, just be like, excuse me. Please leave me alone. And, like, that was not necessary. Yes. I was completely unaccosted. And, just buying that dress, putting that dress on, putting shoes with it, it was an effort. And this woman was basically in a sack. And she just was she was a poodle. She just was – part of it is it's not even that – poodles are not more beautiful than wolves. She was – it's just, like, that ineffable and, you know, like a quality that –
It exudes,
have.
Right?
Yeah.
There's a lot in this book that's about not only just society's perception of beauty, but your own thoughts about it or your own insecurities around it. There's
sure.
a great line in the lingerie chapter about crying in the dressing room about the image that was being given in the mirror that you were seeing. It just wasn't what you wanted it to be. Like,
yeah.
And there was something profound about the idea that, many women go through that, many men go through that. But,
sure.
But there's this idea that as much as we try and we try to put things on and we try to gussy ourselves up, sometimes we're never going to be able to break through to be okay with who we are.
Oh, yeah. I mean, the Victoria's Secret catalog is one of the most insidious publications ever printed on paper. Men probably feel a little differently about it, but and I still open it and look at it, even though I know it will make me hate myself.
I don't speak for men by any stretch, but
that's,
I can't stand
again,
that.
Not
thing.
What
it's
I've
just,
heard.
Yeah, it's not. I mean, it's just.
Yeah, it's. I mean, it's, well, yeah, also garbage. Now in a world of internet porn,
yeah, right.
You don't need it.
Who needs it?
Yeah, you got faster ways to get there.
Yeah, right.
But yeah, that catalog is so kind of ubiquitous in terms of this brand that goes beyond the underwear. It's sort of, this is what you're supposed to look like when you're in your bra and underwear. And I don't know any woman who is looking like a matching set. What am I, the Queen of England? All the time? Well, no, thank you. Yeah, it's real hard.
You know, there's also a really kind of funny essay about getting your first bra where your mom takes you down to, and you think it's going to be this amazing experience,
yeah.
And it really isn't.
No, I basically I'm envisioning that it's going to be like being on a yacht. I think every woman has like that a first bra shopping experience. And I, as a little tomboy, kind of was like, ooh, now I get to be a lady sex person. And then a lot of bra fitters are older Eastern European or Russian ladies, often Jews, sometimes not. Much love. These are my peeps. But
multicolored hair.
Sure.
In some
yeah,
form. Yeah.
An interesting color hair. And they are a little brusque and they kind of measure you the way like a young foal gets put in a bridle for the first time. It's like, get used to this. It's your new life. Put this bit in your mouth. And it doesn't. Yeah, and you walk away with something that's kind of the color of, like, the original copy of the Constitution. Just like a faded, not white,
right.
not
Band-aid
brown,
colored,
a
right?
Band-aid, an industrial. Yeah, it's
but
not,
it still made, you still remarked that it still made you feel good. Like, you're like.
At least I was a part of the club. Oh, yeah. No, I mean, I was a very, very late bloomer. And most of the girls in my class had a bra before I did. And it felt horrible. I was like, what's wrong with me? And the boys in our class, I don't know if this was like a thing that you guys, I don't know if kids still do this, but they did this thing where they would run around. Like one day the boys just started running around. They would come up to you and put their arm around your shoulder and kind of like massage your shoulder. And they'd be like, hey, what's up? And then they'd run away. It was such a stupid boy thing to do. But they, and then it came out that they were like checking to see who was wearing a bra. But yeah.
Yeah.
And I was like, well, what stupid behavior to succumb to. But I was like, well, I wish they felt what they were looking for, these complete idiots. And I was one of the unlucky few, although in retrospect, probably lucky.
Jesse Klein is the writer and comedian. She is the executive producer and head writer for Inside Amy Schumer on Comedy Central. She won an Emmy and a Peabody for that show. Her new book is called You'll Grow Out of It. She's going to be signing books and reading from the book at Anderson's Bookshop at the Standard Club, 320 South Plymouth Court, tomorrow at noon. That's in the South Loop. We'll continue our conversation after the news here with Jesse Klein. Stay with us. Welcome back to The Download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman. My guest tonight at the big table, writer and comedian Jesse Klein. She is the head writer and executive producer for Inside Amy Schumer. She wrote for SNL. She's a stand-up. You can see her stuff on Comedy Central all over the place. Her new book is called You'll Grow Out of It. It's a collection of comedic essays about growing up and growing older. She is going to be signing books at Anderson's Bookshop at the Standard Club, downtown Chicago, tomorrow, 320 South Plymouth Court at noon. All right, so one of the things that I kind of mentioned about growing up and growing older, there are a lot of chapters about to transition to adulthood, and one of them is about the word ma'am.
Mm-hmm. Yes, go
talk
on.
Talk about the idea that as a younger woman, you almost 100% get miss.
Sure, you're a miss
you're
for
a, miss.
A long time.
And then at some point or another, society deems you to be a ma'am. Talk about this.
Yes, one day, just like in a movie, suddenly a long shadow appears over you, and you're like, what is that? And it's the cloud of Mam that has blocked the sun. Yeah, it's, I hate Mam, and I'm also embarrassed that I care, but I'd be lying if I said it didn't just hurt my heart a scotch every time I hear it. Yeah, men get to be sir.
Right.
You're a little boy, like at a certain point, if you go to a boy becomes sir, and you just stay sir until you drop dead one day. It's just sir forever. And sir is kind of cool. It's like, you know, Sir Paul McCartney and James Bond, you know, are sir. You're sir. And there's no judgment in sir. It's just respect. But with women, you're miss. And then for no conceivable reason, the term with which you are addressed has built into it the addresser's understanding / guess of how old you are.
Yeah, right.
And that makes no sense. And I am all for, you know, addressing people like a respectful address, a term of address. Sure. But ma'am just doesn't, it doesn't sound good. And I think part of it is working backwards from older women are just not, ultimately not really respected.
Could it be an
society
anomaly? Could it be someone in the way that they were brought up and they decide that ma'am is what they call it, and the next time you get a miss, you're back to miss?
I occasionally get a miss, but I uh-oh, again, it's disgusting how happy it makes me because I'm fully 40 years old. And so, and there's no, I mean, I'm not like, I think I look, I don't want to be too self-deprecating. I think I look fine, but I'm not a genetic freak where I think someone doesn't have a sense of how I shouldn't be getting carded for alcohol. I wish we could have the equivalent of sir where it's just one thing always.
I mean, that's a thread throughout the book as well, just to, as women grow older and how some of the things change. I mean, obviously the business that you're in, the industry that you're in has a rampant problem with ageism with women.
Yes.
I mean, that's like
an understatement. Yes.
You have dealt with in your young career as well.
Yes.
I'm being 40 years
Thank
old.
Thank you for calling my career young.
But I mean, the idea that, we hear this all the time with some of the stars of Hollywood, as they get older, it becomes more difficult for them to attain any sort of part, like any sort of meaty part that's beyond playing a grandmother.
Yeah.
And you had a similar experience where an executive called it out. I mean, she called it out. So talk about that.
Oh, my God. I mean, I am not really an actress. I like to perform and I do stand up, but God knows I'm not in that world very much. But to the teensy degree that I occasionally am, I was at, in my stand up career, this is not that long ago, I was doing stand-up and then was told that there was a mixer with executives from a network and we're supposed to go be at this restaurant with them, which was horrible. And anyway, I was like, ugh, do I have to? And they were like, literally, yes,
yes, you
do.
Yes, you do.
Not a choice.
The contract states
you
need to be
actually
there, right?
Go. And this woman who is a casting executive at a network came up to me and she was a little drunk, I think. And she was just like, Jesse, I am such a fan of yours. And, thank you. And she's like, you have to move to L.A. You have to. And it's like when you're just like, I'm going to meet you where your energy is. So I was like playing along. I'm like, oh, why? And she's like, so I can cast you in one of my shows. And I'm like, amazing. And I was kind of joking, but in the back of my head, I was like, oh, you're cast in one of my shows. And
you're already imagining the emails you're going to send to family.
I'm packing up the hatchback. And so I said, I was like, well, what would you cast me as? And she takes a few steps back from me, and she looks at me, and she just goes, you could play Natalie Portman's mom. And my head exploded, and I like booked out of there, and I immediately Googled. I mean, I had a sense, but I was like, wait, how old is Natalie Portman?
Right.
And fact-checked me, but I believe that she's 6 years younger than me.
Wow.
I mean, not more.
That is a story that we hear all the time. I mean, I don't understand, why that continues when there's so much pressure that's put on the industry. And you talk about an Amy Schumer show. I mean, there's sketches about it. You guys are really kind of getting at it. And it seems like, with that and the press and so many articles about, just the idea that the typecasting that goes for women at a certain age, why does it continue?
Why isn't the sky pink? Why isn't it a cooler color sometimes? I mean, because the world is filled with nonsense. Because of sexism and... Because of sexism.
for you, I mean, to be in that industry.
I wish
no,
that
but
had
you're
a
right.
funnier
I mean,
tag.
But as to be involved with one of the shows, Amy Schumer's show is groundbreaking in the sense that it does take on those taboos. It tackles a lot of stuff. Won a Peabody for it. Yeah, they don't just give Peabodies because to the popular shows. I mean, there's a reason they give it for social political issues.
We liked getting that.
So, I mean, for you being in the business and finding this opportunity where you are working on a sketch show that able to do that, that's great. But a lot of women don't get that chance, and they do work in this blatantly sexist environment.
Yeah. What are you going to do about it? Let's, like, sit down and, like, draw up some plans. Yeah, I think at least it's so rampant in every industry in different ways, and Hollywood is very bad in a specific way, but women deal with all kinds of sexism everywhere. I think at least within Hollywood, it's still very bad. The eensy bit of progress that I think is being made, and it's people always ask, like, is it so much better? Like, women are having a moment. And it's like, no, it still super, super sucks.
Yeah, right.
But the eensy bit of progress that I think is being made, and I guess there are equivalents for this in other industries as well, is basically when women take charge. And the number of shows and movies, it feels like more progress in TV than movies for sure. But the number of shows that are created by women and written by women for women and men. Oh, that's a sound.
It's a weather outlet.
Oh, yeah. Okay, cool. Yeah, that just taking the reins and writing a show. Yeah, and I'm regretting saying for women because I think one of the more insidious kind of, how to put it, effects of sexism in movies and TV is this notion that women's stories, things that have to do with a woman's life, are inherently more trivial than a man's. And I think that was a huge part of the reason there weren't that many stories that were kind of allowed to be on TV. It's like, well, that's just little stuff.
From your vantage point as an executive producer and head writer, do you see that changing? I mean, you were in development at Comedy Central. You were able to see it at a certain point, and now as an executive?
I think it has changed. It has changed a lot since, you know, when I worked at Comedy Central. I was there. I was never in charge of development there. You know, I started, and when I left, I was like a director. But
you were in the office with some pretty influential comedians.
And I always, the people who worked there were always great, but there was definitely more of a fear about, in terms of the audience and what men would watch, and men want to watch men, and they don't want to watch. They want to watch women jump on trampolines, or they want to see women in bikinis, and that's all fine. But, like, they won't watch women driven, like a woman being funny. And definitely in the last few years, obviously with shows like Inside Amy Schumer and Broad City, which is incredible, and more they are now, the door is way more open. And I think a lot of that has to do with attitudes changing, I think, and it has to do with women, more and more women taking the kind of risk I was talking about earlier and being like, screw it, I'm a comedian, I'm a writer.
Jessie Klein's my guest tonight. She's a writer-comedian. Her book is called You'll Grow Out of It. It's a collection of comedic essays about growing up and growing older. Jessie Klein's going to be at Anderson's Bookshop at the Standard Club in the South Loop at 320 South Plymouth Court tomorrow at noon for a reading and signing. We'll take a quick break. We'll come back. We'll wrap it up here with Jessie Klein. Stay with us. Welcome back to The Download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman. My guest in studio for the hour, writer and comedian Jessie Klein. The book is called You'll Grow Out of It, a collection of comedic essays. And it really is, we kind of established it's not a memoir, but there are recollections to your life that do sort of play it out that way. I mean, it is a collection of comedic essays, but I find myself at the end of the book going, oh, how does this relate? Was she seeing Connie when she was with Dale? You know, like that
yeah.
But that's the point that, I mean, it does kind of feel like we're sort of, you know, getting to know you and understanding the life that you've lived.
Yeah, I mean, I at the end, I kind of just was, I plowed through writing these chapters in no particular order. I kind of wrote them as they came to me. And then when there was a stack at the end, we were like, well, how are we going to arrange this stack? And it felt like, sorry, I just completely burped. It felt like, full wolf. It felt like, yeah, like, I mean, partially laziness because It seems easier. But there was a loose chronological development of like, well, in the layering of life experience, it does feel like they kind of feed into each other in this progression.
Yeah, well, towards the end of the book, you talk a lot about life more recent. You talk about the birth of your child. You talk about the chapter getting an epidural.
Yes.
Get the epidural.
Please get it.
But there
or not.
Or not. But there really is, again, the theme that comes out of this is the pressure that is put on women to do it the right way or to almost make motherhood standard. And that's just not the way it is.
It's not. Oh, my God. It's not the way it is right. On so many levels. Yeah, I mean, I think, look, women from the minute they're born experience a whole, and again, men feel many pressures as well. I just think there's a level of detail and minutia that women are worried about that is very specific. And then you think you've experienced it, and then you get pregnant.
It's amped up.
Yeah, and have a child, having a child, whether you were pregnant to have that child or have a child another way. Yeah, you're from the pregnancy angle, I was not prepared for how public, I think any pregnant woman will tell you, just people, it is shocking how much people feel free to come up to you on the street and just say stuff. Give you advice or touch you or tell you. I mean, so yeah, the story I tell in the book is I was a very large pregnant person, but I was online at a sandwich shop waiting for food, and a woman in front of me turned around and she goes, "When are you due?" Benign enough. And I said, "Whatever, June, whatever." And she, that's standard. And then she went, "Are you having a natural birth?"
Right.
And I was like, "What the F? What?" And I just said, "Hells no." And I was like, clearly we must be done. And then she said, are you getting an epidural? And I was like,
wow.
I can't.
It's a very personal question.
I was like, what? And I said, at the very least, because at the time I was actually planning on having an elective, totally unhealth related C-section. I was not interested in labor at all. And I had no guilt about it. And the only reason I didn't do that was because the baby was born a couple weeks early and it took me by surprise. But I had very clearly instructed my doctor, not only do I want the epidural, I want you to turn it until the knob comes off. and God bless her. I mean, she was all for it. She was like, whatever. Barring whatever health reason that might exist, if it's possible, that's what we'll do.
Well, there's just so much. I mean, that's like the underlying thought of that chapter, and even the chapter about infertility and that comes after, is that it really does show how much everybody wants to be in everybody's business, and there's some sort of standard to in which this sort of is supposed to play out.
Yeah, I mean, I do think women deal with this more, and especially around birth and motherhood, there is this expectation that's created. And I should just say, I am in favor of women doing what makes them happy, and if that's natural, I don't like calling it natural birth because I think natural is part of. Using that word is part of what creates a value judgment that if you have a C-section or you have an epidural, that somehow you like cheated. And there's no cheating. There's just having a baby and you and the baby getting out alive and healthy. And that is the only goal. But I think women fall prey to these pressures, this notion that there is a more heroic, a more natural version of these things where and as I write in the book, that to me has a very scurrilous relationship to women needing to suffer, and that you aren't really a woman unless you've completely self-abnegated your own needs, and you're not really a mother unless anything that you need is erased. And
that's something that's not shared by men. You kind of make the joke. It's a great joke about no one ever says,
yeah,
I'll let you tell. No,
well, yeah, no one ever asks a guy, oh, are you having a natural vasectomy or are you having a natural root canal? Like, right. No. And absolutely not.
It's not something that's usually discussed.
No, yeah. It's not only not discussed, it's not a thing.
It's not a thing.
No. And why? I mean, because it's so crazy and it's so insidious. And it's funny because I did that chapter, to my great delight, was just excerpted in the New York Times. And I really wanted it to be out there. And people had very strong reactions to it. And what was shocking was the number of people who kind of were like, well, why – you shouldn't tell me to get the epidural. And I will just – I really – it's more I just really want everyone to do what they want. And I really feel like a lot of women and I have no judgment about anyone's choices, but I think women get pressured by many different forces into thinking it's not okay to do anything to take care of themselves. And I will also say, you know what really hurts? Contractions. I mean, it's not like I didn't spend 5 hours having them. And like, I mean, I was like, okay, per my doctor's instructions, I kind of stayed at home as long as I could. And it's beyond. And I'm sure for other women wrote in, I mean, lots of people commented on the story in the Times and people were like, it was a breeze. And great.
Great.
Great. Amazing.
For you, I mean, the title of the book is You'll Grow Out of It. And, you know, you really do chronicle your life in comedy and how you took risks and you had to jump off that cliff to be able to follow your dream. You talk about, you know, you're sort of moving from tomboy to tom man and working mm-hmm. out of that. And for you now here, sitting in this studio in Chicago, I mean, have you grown out of it? Do you consider yourself an adult? Do you? I know it's a big question, but
yeah.
You know, do you
can't
you feel,
see, but I'm crawling under the table. And going
do you
the
feel? I mean, do you feel like you've made that transition into adulthood?
I mean, on some days yes, and on some days no. Primarily no. No, I think I always kind of just walk around the world looking at a lot of stuff feels very surreal to me. You know, I still, when I fill out an insurance form, I'm like, I can't believe I'm supposed to do this myself. You know what I mean? Sometimes someone's supposed to do my forms. It all feels really intense. There's some stuff I think I haven't grown out of it. I think there's a fair amount I've gotten used to. Gotten used to it.
That's
more
the second
than I've
book.
Grown it. I've gotten used. Oh my God! I think that is the second
is.
Book. We've
be a
cracked
trilogy.
It. Yes. I'm sending you a check. Thank you. I've gotten used to it. I'm not kidding. That is a good title.
There you go. Writer and comedian Jessie Klein. Her new book is You'll Grow Out of It. She's the head writer and executive producer for Inside Amy Schumer on Comedy Central, which just wrapped up its fourth season. You can check out Jessie. She'll be reading and signing books at Anderson's Bookshop at the Standard Club, 320 South Plymouth Court. That's tomorrow at noon in the South Loop. Jessie Klein, thanks for being my guest
tonight. Thank you so much. It was really fun.
All right. There you go. Nice little conversation with Jessie Klein. Her book, You'll Grow Out of It. A lot of people texting in during the hour saying, I've already read it. It's great. You know, I think it did numbers that it was excerpted in the New York Times back in, I think it was about a week ago. They took that to get an epidural chapter and they took it out and they excerpted that in the New York Times. So I think people knew about it and it's already gotten great reviews. It's a great show, and people also writing in saying, Amy Schumer, season 4, way to go.
I was, I refrained from asking her about Amy Schumer, Chicago boyfriend. Is that still a thing?
I don't know. Yeah.
That was like a huge thing yeah. for like a day or
yeah,
two.
Yeah, it was, wasn't it? Yeah, that's a good question. Because Amy was in town doing a... stand-up shows and stuff like that, and then it was like on Instagram or something.
Yeah,
like that.
She tweeted a picture.
I hope they're together.
Yeah, it's a furniture salesman
or maybe
designer.
Maybe I don't. I don't.
I don't care either way.
I don't know. Yeah. A lot of things in the world.
She occasionally, because her brother, I believe her brother is a musician. Amy Schumer's brother is a musician in town, jazz
okay.
musician
yeah.
in town.
Yeah.
So occasionally there'll be, you'll see an Amy Schumer spotted at, you know, a coffee shop or something like that. And I get very giddy about it.
Yeah,
very rubish.
Well, I mean, the show's really good and they deserve the Emmy. And I really liked that they got the Peabody, you know, it's pretty cool. Coming up in the 9 o'clock hour, we're going to talk about public spaces and being able to sort of reinvent or I guess it's sort of change them into public art spaces. So public spaces into public art spaces. It's been a big series along. The Chicago Loop Alliance does this all the time, and they do a whole series called Activate. And we're going to talk about that. And they're sort of every I'm not sure when it, how often it is, and we'll talk with a representative coming up here. But the one that's coming up tomorrow is all about smell, and they're doing it in an alleyway behind the Hard Rock Hotel here on Michigan Avenue. So I'm looking forward to talking about that, because I really do enjoy installments, especially public spaces and public art in public spaces. I think it's really great, and it's really fun that the Chicago Loop Alliance does that, and we're going to talk with Tristan Hummel, who's really dedicated his life to it. So we'll talk about that coming up as well. It's a download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman, 720 WGN. With you till 11 o'clock tonight. Coming up right after the 9:30 news, Digable Planets, the influential, iconic hip-hop trio, reuniting this week or this summer. They have a tour, and they are going to be at Pitchfork Music Festival. We continue our series all week long, showcasing some of the acts that are going to be at the festival. And we will talk with Ishmael Butler from Digable Planets coming up after the 9:30 news. Rebirth of Slick. It's pretty great. Well, the Activate event series continues this week. It's a great series. And it takes place in an alley. That's right. The series that puts art experiences in public spaces is taking this week's installment to a downtown alley. And it's all about smell. It's called Activate Smell, and it'll take place from 5 p.m. to 10 p.m. at the alleyway behind the Hard Rock Hotel on Michigan Avenue. Tristan Hummel's the creative director of the Chicago Loop Alliance, who puts on the Activate series. He's with me now. Tristan, thanks for being here.
Hey, thanks so much for having
me. So I'm playing around a little bit with it, obviously, with this sort of this idea, but it is an event. You're taking an Activate series, and you're doing it in an alley. First of all, before we get to the event tomorrow, talk about the overarching idea of this year's events at the Chicago Loop Alliance.
That's great. So Activate transforms underutilized urban environments into creative spaces of exploration and discovery. So in order to like give people access to that just conceptually, we are running with a theme for our series of six events, and it's the senses. So taste, touch, see, hear, smell, and then a mysterious sixth sense at the end.
I see dead people.
Yeah, yeah.
No, but talk about what. Give us an idea before we get to the one that you're doing tomorrow for smell. What are some of the others you've done around some of the senses, like for taste?
Gosh, so far we've done touch and hear. For touch, great. We created a giant adult ball pit. We got these things called dunnage bags. They are a thing used in the shipping industry to keep cargo from flopping around. So we got these used bags. They inflate. They become about 8 foot by 4 foot, and we wrap them in gold spandex. We made 100 of these giant balloons. So they're ultra lightweight, super durable. You can build couches out of them, and we put them in a big pile and let people just go through and throw them around. Just, again, like an adult playground. For here, we did a silent disco party. So if you're familiar with that concept, you put on a headphone, and the DJ is broadcasting only to those headphones what he's playing. So as a participant, you get to rock out with people simultaneously. And as an observer, you get to watch people squirm around really awkwardly with no perceptible music.
Well, okay, so what's the impetus behind this series? I mean, for you at the Chicago Loop Alliance, what's the end game for you guys to put these events on?
So we want to pull people sort of a little bit out of their comfort zone, right? So there's this thing we all do. We get off the train or we get out of our car and we walk to work. And we've done that journey so many times that we no longer see the world around us. There could be a new store, or there could be a new mural or something, but you're not really looking.
You got your headphones on. You're going right to where you got to get.
Exactly. It's that zombie mode. And so by having these events, we're pulling people hopefully slightly out of their norm. And once they're in that space, they can start to create new experiences, positive experiences in the loop. And then ultimately, they'll want to hang out maybe more in the loop, or they'll create these good memories, and it will be it'll feel a little bit more like home.
Well, it's fascinating. The history of the loop, you know, has gone in waves, and there was a time in my life where the goal was to shut the loop down, to get out at night and keep it clear. And this was a business district. But with the Chicago Loop Alliance and what you guys have been doing in the last couple decades now, there's really been a push to bring people down here, especially at night.
That's right. And our efforts are aligning with sort of the shifting sort of population loop, right? It's becoming more residential every year. And it's becoming, you know, people are starting to want amenities. You see places open like Chicago Athletic Association, which is suddenly a destination right. post 6 p.m. And with that, people are kind of wanting amenities like arts and culture, and that's where we come in.
We're talking with Tristan Hummel. He's the creative director for the Chicago Loop Alliance. Okay, so let's talk about Activate Smell. You're doing Activate Smell in the alleyway behind the Hard Rock Hotel. Right. What does that mean?
So the idea is that we bring you an experience that has been curated around the act of smelling. So there's going to be plenty to smell, but it's more of a conceptual-driven experience, right? So there's going to be things to smell, like you'll get to create your own essential oils and take them home with you. You'll get to create your own perfumes. You'll get to walk through a flower temple. But there's going to be sort of experiences that mesh well with smell or surround smell or help define smell, such as like guided meditation or a drum circle or a reggae band.
This is all in the alley behind the Hard Rock. That's a lot going on in the alley.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's packed. This is maybe the most visually overloaded Activate that we've had to date.
I mean, I love the concept. I mean, you know, if I'm, I guess I think about it, if it's not a destination, if it's not something that I found and I want to go do, if I'm walking past that alley, I'm definitely going to be, I guess I'm going to be surprised.
Yeah, you're going to be surprised. You're going to be drawn in. I'd say about half of our traffic is just people who see it from the streets and sort of wander over. It's a totally free event, so anybody can kind of come in and get into it.
All right, Tristan Hummel is the creative director of the Chicago Loop Alliance. We'll take a quick break. We'll come back. We'll continue our conversation. I'm interested in how we can – I mean, you have a background in transforming public spaces and really working with public art. I think it's a really interesting, unique concept, and I want to talk to you about – when it's done right, when it's done wrong, and what we can, and when it, or how we expand it past just what's being done in the loop. Tristan Hummel, my guest tonight. Stay with us. It's a download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman with you till 11 o'clock tonight. We're talking about the Activate Events series, which is going to continue tomorrow from 5 to 10 p.m. in the alleyway behind the Hard Rock Hotel on Michigan Avenue. We're going to be looking at Activate Smell. The series is all around the senses, and this week it's going to be Smell. Tristan Hummel is the creative director of the Chicago Loop Alliance. The Activate series is really put on to keep people downtown to have fun with events that are really going to showcase what you can do in the loop after hours. Tristan Hummel's here. You know, I mentioned before the break that you really have dedicated your life to public art. I mean, that's really your area. What was the draw for you to get involved in this?
Just like even organizing art in general, I went to art school and I realized just how bad I was at art. Like everyone there was so good. And so I thought, well, maybe I can organize this. And, you know, I sort of found my calling. We ended up doing this show called Art on Track for a number of years, 6 years. And it was, we rented out a 6-car CTA train and circled just the loop track, let people on and off, charged like $10 for the ticket. It was a special train. You'd switch at 4 different stations. Artists participated totally for free. And it was a great little program, and eventually that's when Chicago Loop Alliance approached me, and they're like, hey, how would you like to run our art programs?
I said, how do people react to that? I mean, obviously the concept is one, if you have an open-minded person who's like, oh, I definitely love the way that there's art on this train and you can go different places. But the normal person who's maybe in a position where they know art as, you know, on the walls of a museum, how are they reacting to this?
You know, that's great. I'm really glad you said that, because it's the train, you know, it's a gimmick, right? Kind of. And but it bridges a gap. And it's the same thing that Activate does. It's the same thing I strive in all of my programs. It's how do you make art accessible to everyone? You know, a museum experience is not that great. And I hate to say that. I mean, it's fun. I love it, but not for everybody, right? Like, more people are going to go to a movie this weekend than will visit the Art Institute in the next 10 years. And why is that? They're both art entertainment.
Right.
But sorry to get back. Like,
no, I love it. I love it.
A little more narrow. You know, the train lets people go, okay, they're familiar with that space. And as silly as that sounds, they feel much more comfortable entering that and looking at art. Like, the first year we did that show, no promotion at all, we got 2,000 people to come out. And it's just because they felt comfortable doing it.
Well, you see it a lot. You see most of public art that we see comes in the form of murals or walls that are being painted by in neighborhoods, or, you know, you'll see it all over Chicago. And in downtown Chicago, you've seen a push towards public art. We had the eyeball for a little
That's
bit
right.
That was over there on State Street. But talk about the you know, how important it is to have public art installations in the place that you live.
That's right. You know, public art is so important. And the best public art, I'll give you an example, is art that you can create your own experiences around. Again, getting to experience, but the Picasso downtown, right? Awesome public art. And it's not because it looks the best. It's because kids can skateboard on it and they're not shooed off by anybody. I don't know, anytime you drive past it, there's kids on skateboards using that bottom part as a ramp. And the fact that they can connect with a civic structure in that way right downtown, it creates this really friendly, frankly, very supervised environment for them to have fun.
Right.
That's successful public art.
And what's non-successful public art? I mean, because we see a lot of attempts at this stuff, and then you'll see it kind of go away. When we think of public art not working, what comes to mind?
Right. Well, you know, unfortunately, you know, because it's the public realm, a lot of people have access to it. And sometimes you get people creating art that don't necessarily understand how to make a piece that can resonate or connect with an audience. And any public art that doesn't connect with, well, the public is probably bad public art.
Yeah. Well, there's some tremendous strides in public art, especially when you talk about downtown installations, of course, mm-hmm. which you guys have been doing at the Loop Alliance, but also Millennium Park.
Oh, yeah.
You know, the Cloud Gate and the fountains, mm-hmm. both are pieces of public art that are world renowned at this point. I mean, Chicago has really invested in public art and installations in the last 20 years.
We are, and it's cheesy, but I don't think there's a better example of successful public art than Cloud Gate. That is hands down the best that's ever been done.
Right.
I mean, it's brilliant. It's just a brilliant thing. It attracts people. It reflects them. It can be anything you want it to be. It can be a selfie moment, or it can be something to marvel at. I mean, it's just great. And so I think we're going to see, especially as downtown becomes more and more a place to live as well as work, that there's going to be a higher demand for amenities like public art, which... You know, public art, the great thing about it is it creates a space that feels safe and comfortable and well managed, and that's kind of where you want to be.
You know, there's been evolution when it comes to public art. Like I mentioned, you know, murals have really been commissioned mm-hmm. at a different time. You don't see it as much as it used to be. That was public art back in the day, and we've seen so many different pieces of sculptures and like we just mentioned with Cloud Gate or even the Picasso over in Daly Plaza. You know, as we move forward and we think differently about art and how it engages with the public, what are some of the advances in public art that we're seeing around the country, around the world? I mean, are there more open kind of concepts like Cloud Gate that are changing the way public art is being done?
I think so. I think we're starting to see public art being built in as sort of an amenity from like the design process forward. So like even the Riverwalk down here is a great example of integrating art and design into the space. So it doesn't scream public art necessarily, but it was definitely built with that kind of public art piece in mind. You know, you're going to start seeing, I think, artists being involved in like the design process, just as much as like an urban planner would be when you start to build buildings.
When you guys, I mean, we're done with the Activate series, which you just started, you only got a couple senses done. But when you get through it, is this something that you see is going to be an annual part of trying to get public art installations involved with Loop goers?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think public art can take a lot of forms. And for us, you know, it's very temporal. I think public art could be a moment of discovery. And hopefully as Activate like grows and evolves, we'll be able to provide maybe like a multitude of moments, right? So every time you're coming downtown, there's something new to explore, find, even if it's mundane, as long as it captures your attention and gets you interested in the area, then that's kind of a win.
Well, it's becoming, the Chicago Loop Alliance has done some great things in the past and continues to reimagine how sort of public participation and events happen here in the city of Chicago, especially downtown. Tristan Hummel is the creative director at Chicago Loop Alliance. The event is called Activate Smell. It'll take place from 5 p.m. to 10 p.m. tomorrow night at the alleyway behind the Hard Rock Hotel on Michigan Avenue, just right here across the bridge, 200-300 Michigan, right? Something like that. The Hard Rock Hotel on Michigan, the alleyway behind. Tristan, thanks for coming in and sharing some stuff tonight.
Thank you very much.
A lot of amazing weather-related tweets and social media, and thanks to everybody who sent in pictures of the rainbows, double rainbows, that were all over Chicago tonight. lots of great photos. Really is one of those nights when you can use the backdrop of the city of Chicago, the architecture, the neighborhoods you live in, the highways, whatever it is. I mean, so many great shots. And it also reminds me, too, of how vast and wide the coverage is for WGN Radio. You know, I'll get people who are texting me photos from Lincoln Park and then somebody from Stickney to, you know, to someone who was out in, oh, where was it at? I asked them, Oak Park. And then someone said, I have to look it all up. I have it all here. But there's so many different great photos. It's really cool. Coming up at 10 o'clock, Picnic. We're giving legitimate, authentic nicknames to the 2016 Chicago Cubs. It's All-Star break. It's also the day without sports. This is that day.
Now wait, there's soccer and WNBA action to talk about.
I take it back. I take it back. The WNBA is playing. And there is soccer. Are they going to play that game? Did the rains
just started?
Subside? Oh, there
just started.
Go.
Yeah.
No major American sports, I guess is the way you say it. No basketball, hockey, baseball, or football. But we're still going to go ahead with the nicknames. We thought since it was the All-Star break, a perfect time for us to break out the coaches and management. Joe Maddon and Theo Epstein. That's who we're going to be giving nicknames to tonight, 312-981-7200. We're going to do it after 10 o'clock. We have some stuff to give away. We'll give away a Pequod's pizza gift card. And why not a MyPillow? Since it's on the sheet, they're going to get mad. But you know what? We'll get to another one. 312-981-7200. That's coming up. Nicknames for Joe Maddon, Theo Epstein. Joel Reese going to join us tonight from Baseball Prospectus Wrigleyville. And he will help us give some facts and figures to give us some inspiration for Joe Maddon and Theo Epstein. What do you know about you know a lot about those guys?
No, not really. I mean, I know Joe Maddon likes antics. He wears a lot of the Lance Armstrong type wristbands. A little bit too many for my liking.
Right. Too many wristbands.
He's got an old like VW van that he drives around
he's
in.
Like a hippie.
Yeah.
And Theo Epstein, he does the concert, he plays guitar.
Yep. Right? Yeah.
Boston, Theo.
Boy genius.
Boy genius. Epstein. Horshack.
Oh, yeah.
I'm trying to figure it out. There's a lot there. So we'll do all that.
Fun.
Yeah, that's going to be fun. That's going to be fun, right? There's a lot to do there. Theo Epstein and Joe Maddon coming up after 10 o'clock. Coming up after the news here at 9:30, Diggable Planets, Ishmael Butler is going to join us to talk about their reunion tour, the influential hip-hop trio is back together, and they're hitting the festival circuit. They're going to be at Pitchfork, I believe, is it Friday or Saturday? Saturday. But unbelievable to be able to talk with Diggable Planets about their illustrious career. That's coming up here on Download right after the news. Welcome back to the Download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman. Well, it's Pitchfork week here on the Download. We're talking to several of the acts that will be playing at Union Park this week. You heard early in the week Twin Peaks and the band Whitney. It also includes tonight's guest, Ishmael Butterfly Butler, one-third of the groundbreaking hip-hop group Diggable Planets.
We like the breeze, float straight out of our lids. Them, they got boo bodies, hard rock Brooklyn kids. Us, floor rush, when they DJ booming classics. You dig the crew on the fattest hip-hop record. He touched the kinks and sinks into the sounds. She frequents deep, fatter joints called undergrounds. Our funk zooms like you hit the Mary Jane. They flock to booms, man, Boogie had to change. Who freaks the clips with mad amount percussion? Where kinky hair goes to unthought of dimensions? Why is it so fly? Cause hip-hop kept some drama. When Butterfly rocked the light, new sway boomers. What about a cut? We push it off the corner. How was the buzz entire hip-hop era?
was fresh in fact since they started saying Audi. Cause funk's made fat from right beneath my hood. The Cuba of the styles like Miles and ish. Like 60s funky worms with waves and perms. Just sending junky rhythms right down your block. We beat to rap, what key beat to lock. But I'm cool like that. I'm cool like that. I'm cool like that.
Digable Planets exploded on the scene with their debut album, Reachin', which included the jam we just heard. The group put out one more album, then broke up in 1995, citing creative differences. But that's the past, and Pitchfork is the future. They've reunited, and they'll be playing on Saturday in Union Park. My guest tonight, Ishmael Butler, Butterfly from Digable Planets. Ishmael, thanks for joining us. We appreciate it.
I appreciate being here. Thank you.
This is a reunion for Digable Planets. How's it feel to be back on stage together again?
It's feeling pretty smooth, man. We have played a couple of festivals, Essence Festival, and did the Sasquatch Festival in Washington State, and it's been kind of sweet, man. We got a nice band and kind of took the songs from the old school songs and used them as a point of departure for kind of very subtle updates and stuff like mm-hmm. that, you know. So it's just been cool, man. We've been having fun together, bro, so I'm happy.
Is that, I mean, that's obviously a big part of it, is having fun together when a group is broken up and you guys get back together. And I mean, this isn't the first reunion for you guys, but is that really what's at, I mean, that's at the core of being able to do a reunion tour, is having fun?
I think so. I mean, it varies, you know. Some people got all kind of reasons for maybe reuniting. I mean, it's like, for me, and I think I can speak somewhat for the other people in the group, we didn't have a bad relationship, so to speak, with each other, but we did have creative differences. We were young. We wanted to go do our own thing, so that was sort of the opposite of the breakup. But being able to get shows and for people to still want to see you and listen to your music after this amount of yeah. time, when offers come in, you can't really turn those down because it's a blessing. You know what I'm saying? So we looked at it like that, like, hey, people still want to see us. We need to go out there and take that opportunity. That's where I'm at with it.
I mean, there's so much creativity that goes into your work. I mean, not just with Digable Planets, but Shabazz Palaces. I mean, you really have been trying to stretch the medium of hip hop from all the way to 1993. Let's go back to 1993, the rebirth of Slick. I mean, obviously, were you surprised as a group of kids who were from all around the country, but, you know, we're Brooklyn based. Were you surprised at how successful, how much that song crossed over and your band crossed over to mainstream America?
I mean, flabbergasted, you know, because at that time, it was much more narrow of a path to exposure. You know what I mean? So it was much more of a dice roll from the time you went into the studio to the time you chose your artwork to the time that things were pressed up and put out into the public for consumption. You just really never knew, couldn't predict the outcome in any kind of way. So, yeah, we were. I don't even have any words for it. You know, surprise is a little.
Are you? Do you look back on that? Do you look back? I mean, they're talking 20 plus years now. I mean, 23 years. Do you look back on that time and with fondness? Do you think about, you know, the times of touring off of that record and all of the hoopla and the MTV and everything that went into it? Is that a fond memory in your life?
Definitely, man. Definitely. I mean, it's like it's dreamy. You know what I mean? It's kind of surreal and dreamlike in a way. You know, and then to be far removed from it temporally and looking back on it, it's even more dreamlike. Because when you're doing it, you're kind of surfing on the wave, not really paying attention to things because they're happening so fast. So reflection makes it more fantastic and a little bit more dreamlike. And then it's funny how memories come back to you in different pieces and different flashes here and there. So it's pretty wild. Plus, that was the time we got to see the world. You know, right. I hadn't been anywhere before that, and after that, I had been many, many places in foreign lands and everything, so that's a fond memory for sure.
You have a penchant for pushing the envelope and being creative. I mean, even with that record, there were so many different threads, whether it be hip-hop and jazz and improvisation that you were putting together. The follow-up record was critically acclaimed. It didn't have the same commercial success. I just wonder, you know, when you have such a big hit, like you had such a big hit with Rebirth of Slick, I mean, does it put a lot of restraints on you as a musician to have to have the pressure to do, you know, Rebirth of Slick 2, you know, instead of doing what you want to do, which is be creative and maybe try some different avenues, say something different?
Yeah, I think if you want to be a pop star or maintain stardom, then you do get that pressure because you do have to deliver, you know. But if you're I was the type of person that I only wanted to reach the levels of notoriety and fame, quote unquote, but I only wanted to be wherever my songs took me. You know what I mean? It wasn't like a vocation of being a star where you have to do these things in order to maintain it. It was like, look, if you do a good song and it becomes a hit, that's cool. But if you don't and it doesn't, I'm okay with that as well. So it wasn't about stardom and fame as it was about how much love and passion that I have for making music and exploring ideas. And I feel like us in the group, we felt like that. So ironically, our second album is the album that I think has its tentacles in culture more so than the first one. The first song is known, but the second album is a little bit more critically accepted and gave us or at least contributed to the longevity that we've had so far. So, you know, commercial success is one thing. Underground critical success has a whole nother life to it too. So, like I said, man, I just take it how it comes. You know?
Well, for you, I mean, you mentioned it was it's much more narrow to be to have a celebrated and successful hip hop record in 1993 than it would be now. I mean, talk about being a musician who's really been on both sides. I mean, with Shabazz Palaces and the reunion tour of Diggable Planets, it's a different world now. The music industry's changed. You can go at it and you can create music in your bedroom, in your basement, and put it out to fanfare. Talk about how you've adjusted as a musician, a hip hop musician, to the changing nature of the music industry.
I think it's like constantly in flux, you know, your adjustment, because there's such a vast, well, the internet seems vast, but there's the expedition from idea in a room to possibly reaching out to fans is so much faster and so much easier nowadays. I think it allows you to be get your ideas out to a public faster. But there's a drawback in it that it's a sort of a deluge of the amount of people mm-hmm. that are seeking sort of the same ears and eyes that you might be seeing. So you constantly, I think you got to work faster nowadays. And if you're trying to, as you say, be different or be unique, or at least just be yourself and not sort of do cookie cutter music in order to get, you know, fame, it's difficult, man, because you wonder what matters anymore, you know, because it seems like kind of fast food music is what becomes popular and personalities sort of supersede whatever the substance of the music is. So for me, I find it difficult. I don't think it's bad. I don't long for the old days or anything like that. But coming from that period of time and being sort of made my bones in that period of time, I feel like it's hard to navigate this period of time, but it's just a challenge, and there's always a challenge when you're being creative, so it's something that's welcome, but that's a difference that I see.
You have really made a bedrock of creativity. I mean, the stuff with Shabazz Palaces is really stretching the medium when it comes to hip-hop. I mean, you're talking about just a lot of different sounds, creativity. It's just something that you're not hearing on the urban radio stations in Chicago.
Right.
Talk about how is it easier or more difficult to produce in that way, to stretch the limits as you get older? I mean, do you feel like you're more confident with trying new things and trying new music, or do you feel like it's somewhat of a challenge?
I feel both, because I feel confident because I practiced a lot and produced a lot, but I also, it's daunting to try to make your way in a new aesthetic, you know, with a new outlook, with people that may not see things your way. But like I said, I think the best things creatively happen when you're under pressure, you're challenged by yourself and by whatever arena you're trying to jump into. So I kind of seek that out as the optimum condition to try to create something in.
It's interesting because we had the president of Pitchfork on not too long ago, and we were talking about the audience demographic. You know, I went and saw Chance the Rapper at Pitchfork last year, and there was a point, I'm 41 years old, and I would have been the heyday for Diggable Planets, like I was a teenager when I was, you know. And there was a point where I'm like, I think a friend's daughter walked by, And she was like, you know, 17 years old. And I'm like, oh, I'm such a dad. I don't know what happened here. But like for you as a musician who's on a reunion tour and it's Diggable Planets, and for me and for Pete and the people and who are listening to WGN right now, that's very exciting to be able to know that. I mean, you're playing to a lot of kids who are at 17, 18 years old, you know, are going to a festival to sit out in the sun and see their favorite acts. And Diggable Planets is not a nostalgia trip for them. How do you approach a show like that in which it's awesome to be on the bill because it's Diggable Planets and it gets people interested, but a lot of the audience wasn't there for the first round?
Yeah, well, I mean, I have a lot of anxiety, you know, because it's like you want people to, you know, accept you and enjoy what you're doing. You know what I'm saying? So I think it's hard, you know, but again, it's an opportunity to flourish your ideas and play your music. So, man, I approach it with a lot of excitement, but like, you know, there's some trepidation around it, you know. So, but again, you know, it speaks to the sort of timelessness, the fact that music shouldn't be categorized in anything temporally or stylistically, really, because music is this vibrational thing that can last throughout any sort of dates and times. So I think when you look at it that way, people come to enjoy themselves, and if they see you got passion and you've taken the time to develop your ideas and have some uniqueness to it, you got a good chance of succeeding to entertain them and make them feel something. So, you know, like I said, there's some trepidation, but I feel confident about it too and look forward to it. You know, and lucky. I feel lucky to have a chance.
Ishmael Butterfly Butler is one of the members of Diggable Planets. Diggable Planets will be on stage at the Pitchfork Music Festival on Saturday. Ishmael, thanks so much for taking some time out to talk to us tonight. We appreciate it.
Thank you, brother. Have a good one, man.
On the ESPYs tonight, this is disheartening. Dwayne Wade, who I keep forgetting is a Chicago athlete. First, it's like, there's no Chicago athletes on this broadcast. And I'm like, oh, Dwayne Wade. Dwayne Wade, they just showed that he's introducing for Best Male Athlete. He's the guy who comes out, the presenter. On his walkout, he's wearing a tuxedo.
Mm-hmm.
As he's walking out, they have a full body shot. And Mr. Wade has shoes with no socks.
Mm-hmm.
LeBron James won, by the way. Shoes with no socks, tuxedo. Mm-hmm. Now, in Jesse Klein's book, she has a whole chapter about guy. She was talking about her relationships and one guy that she met, and he was wearing nice clothes, this, that, but he was wearing loafers with no socks.
Mm-hmm.
And it is known by women everywhere not to trust men who wear loafers with no socks. That was a thing, and I laughed because I have these shoes I wear on Saturdays that I don't wear socks with. But looking at Dwayne Wade, who's essentially wearing, it almost looks like capri pants.
Yeah, so I mean, it's not like his pants are covering.
No, his pants are floods. They roll up above the ankle. It's a style. But he's got no socks on and shoes while he's wearing a tuxedo. You ain't gonna see Michael Jordan doing that. Even Scottie Pippen's not gonna pull that off.
No? Isn't Dwayne
Wade? You like that?
No, I hate it, but I mean, isn't Dwayne...
You seem to be very like, I'm going to support Dwayne Wade's fashion choice.
Well, I am not. I have four shirts that I rotate every single day and one pair of jeans. So I'm not the fashion. Dwayne Wade seems very fashion forward.
Yeah, well, I don't know about that. When he gets to Chicago, we're going to have to work on a couple things. Number one, you're not wearing a tuxedo to the ESPYs with your loafers with no socks. You're not going to the beach. It's not the Hamptons, Mr. Wade. You're representing the city of Chicago now, you know?
Yeah, that's right.
You go in there, you look sharp, you look tight.
We wear socks here.
We wear socks that match the pant. Come out there, you do your thing, you go, and people go, that guy right there, that's some integrity. That's a guy. Dwayne Wade, Chicago Bull. Right now, people are like, he's not tough. He's not a good basketball player. You can tell, no socks. Who goes to an award show that's going to be broadcast by millions of people and come out with that look? I flummoxed you.
Yeah, well, I mean, I don't know anything about fashion. Dwayne Wade seems like maybe he doesn't know, but like he's surrounded by
he's
designers.
So Miami. You're right. That's what they wear in Miami. I'm just saying right now.
Yeah. We got to change it up.
You're down there in South Beach right now, and everyone's like, that's style.
Mm-hmm.
D Wade with some style. Those capri pants, loafers, no socks. That's style. Now you're Chicago Bull.
Yeah.
You can't do that. That's just who are you representing?
Who do we get? Who do we get on the case?
This is my. We should use Susanna Homan, the cats at Chicago Magazine, should do a whole piece on this, right?
Dress them up properly.
Yeah. Or Michigan Avenue, North Michigan Avenue Magazine, or Michigan Avenue Magazine, right? Just a piece of fashion. We should get fashion. We should talk to the Go Fug Yourself women who came on.
Yeah.
And just say that there's fashion appropriate. And as in Jesse Klein's book, she was like, a guy who dresses like that cannot be trusted. So then you go, Dwayne Wade just made this weird choice to come play in Chicago, and he didn't, you know, he made some weird sort of unsettling remarks where he said, I wish I had more time to make this decision. It was a really tough one. If I had more time, I'd probably stay in Miami, but I had to go to Chicago. Muh. You know, thanks. You know, as a Chicago Bulls fan, thanks. Great to have you. Yeah, okay, good. But, I mean, you know, like, there it is. Jesse's not wrong.
Well, you just said that you wear socks with no shoes.
I wear them with shorts. No, these are not. This is.
This is a different.
This is summer wear that I'm wearing. Like, it might as well be flip-flops.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not going to the club. I'm not going to the ESPYs.
Mm-hmm.
With my $20 DSW boat shoes, you know, that I don't wear socks with. There's a big difference. 847 says, no socks, no shoes, no award. He was the presenter. So, yeah, I just, you know, maybe there's some, I mean, yeah, maybe that flies on the merengue party on the yacht in Miami.
Well, LeBron James, who seemed to have a normal tuxedo mm-hmm. on, mm-hmm. you know, he was also in Miami, obviously, but now back in the Midwest.
In Cleveland, he figured it out.
Yeah.
If he was still playing for the Heat, he would have come out in a linen suit with a little Cuban hat with no socks and loafers. And they'd been like, the winner is LeBron James. Dun-dun-dun-dun-dun. And he'd come out and done the whole thing. So, yeah, so I don't know. I think Dwayne Wade's going to have to – where's Joe Cowley and the guys at the Sun-Times on this? They better be all over this. Can't come out dressed like that.
Let's do the makeover. Do it right here on the download.
The download makeover.
Yeah.
You need to get yourself a windbreaker. Preferably a windbreaker that has a beer sponsor on the back. You have to wear Levi's jeans, white socks, and the cheapest Nike you possibly can find at the shoe store. That's the outfit. And a mustache. Dwayne Wade's got to get a big furry mustache, right? If he's going to be a Chicago Bull, I'd like to see that, like a big furry kind of Charles Oakley mustache.
My mustache didn't work well for Michael Jordan, so maybe.
Yeah, all right. That didn't work out. But he never really, I guess he did have it in Chicago a little bit, didn't he?
Yeah.
That was a little older, but I think you got to go with what was the guy? It's on the tip of my tongue. Who played AJ Green? He played in L.A.
Yeah.
He had a mustache. Mustachioed.
Mm-hmm.
You got to go with a mustache. You know, I like to see Dwayne Wade bring the mustache back. If you're going to bring anything back, bring the mush back.
Let's hashtag this.
Bring
the mustache.
No socks, no shoes, no Chicago. No socks, no Chicago. Right? Come on.
Look, he can get a Canada Goose Men's High Bridge light jacket. Very fashionable, only $524.
You agree, though, Martyr. You agree, right? I mean, you're going out on the ESPYs and you're Dwayne Wade and you've got a tuxedo and you've got your pants above your ankles and no socks with shoes.
As far as I'm concerned, the only man who can wear capri pants is Rafael Nadal.
Right.
Period.
Right. And he's not wearing it to an award show.
No.
Everyone's all, you know, bow tied up.
He's going to need a parka.
Esmeralda, real quick. Dwayne Wade hits the ESPYs, you know, the new Chicago Bull. He wears a tuxedo with capri pants. no socks, loafers. Go.
How short are the capris?
They go to just above the ankle. So really, you
can. That's not the worst.
No, it's not the worst, but it's just not Chicago. You can't do it. I don't know.
He's a different kind of Chicago.
Yeah. Oh, Chance the Rapper. Okay, let's take a break. Let's get to the news. Let's go! Strong use of the W.
So tell your family, call your friends. The Cubs are rocking on WGN.
Oh, nice. All right, it's a download here on WGN Radio Wednesday night, so that means it's time for Picnic. This is our weekly segment where we are dedicated to giving each member of the Chicago Cubs, the 2016 team, a legitimate, authentic nickname. Since it's the All-Star break, we were kind of tossing around. You know, we kind of want to save Anthony Rizzo and some of the others. I was actually doing the math, Pete, that we have about 9 or 10 weeks left of this, and we're running out of players because we're doing a lot. So we thought this, because it's the All-Star break, a great opportunity would be to get the manager and the general manager involved in our game picnic, and that means Joe Maddon and Theo Epstein. They're getting nicknames tonight on Picnic. 312-981-7200. Winner's going to get a Pequod's Pizza gift card and or a MyPillow. A pillow and a pizza. How great is that? Joel Reese is here. What's not to like? Joel Reese. He writes for Baseball Prospectus, Wrigleyville. He also does the podcast, which you can find on Twitter, at BP Wrigleycast. Good to see you.
Hey, thanks a lot for having me.
Great to have you. All right, so Theo Epstein and Joe Maddon. What do we need to know about these guys? Why don't we start with Theo?
Okay, Theo. Well, you know, I think a lot of people are going to talk about him being the boy wonder and the genius. I'll just start off by saying he hates that. He's actually a pretty humble guy. And I remember I saw a video with him, and like right after he came to town, and the guy was like, "So you're the savior of," and he was like, immediately, he visibly bristled. He's like, "That's your word, not mine." So we could come up with that, but he's not going to like it. But right. Before we get into it, just real quick, I just want to tell the story of how he came to the Cubs, because I don't think people realize how incredibly lucky it was. So the deal was, it was the last day of the 2011 season. And the Red Sox, because right, he was with the Red Sox, and the Red Sox were playing the Orioles, and all they had to do was win. They were tied with the Orioles, or excuse me, they were tied with the Tampa Bay Rays at that point. So they needed to win and Tampa Bay lose, and then they're in the playoffs. And they had been up by 9 games a couple weeks earlier, and they slid.
Oh, this was the unbelievable season where every team was on the line at the end. That was the best day in baseball history.
So the Red Sox were up against and the Orioles were one of the worst teams in baseball. So they bring in their closer, Jonathan Papelbon. He blows a save. So they lose. So, you know, and then everyone turns their attention to the Yankees-Tampa Bay game.
Yeah.
Well, the Yankees had been up 7-0.
Right.
And so a hitter by the name of Dan Johnson, who was batting 108, came up.
This is the final day of the year.
It's the final strike.
108.
It's two outs, two strikes. And if he strikes out, the Red Sox are in the playoffs. He hits a home run. Game goes into extra innings. Tampa Bay wins. Boston loses. They're out of the playoffs. Everyone in Boston freaks out. They freak out. The management freaks out. They start leaking to the press, like, "Oh, you know, manager Terry Francona was taking a lot of pills." Like, and everyone, like, John Lackey and a bunch of pitchers.
Yeah, that this was the
clubhouse
the
eating the fried chicken.
Fried chicken and the beer.
Yeah,
Beckett,
yeah.
Right.
And
right.
Beckett, exactly. And so Theo was like, he had toyed with the idea of leaving before, and he's like, "You know what? I'm done. I don't need this drama. I'm out." And Ricketts was looking for someone to lead the team. He sees Theo Epstein gets on the market, and he's like, he jumps in, he woos him, you know, takes him to their massive place in New York and kind of wines him and dines him, and Theo Epstein comes to Chicago.
Wow.
And now here we are.
There you go, because of an awesome
because
final
of Dan
game.
Johnson.
Because of Dan. Thanks, Dan Johnson.
Yes, exactly.
All right, so let's get to some of the texts right away here. 312-981-7200. All right. 312 says for Joe Madden, Marty Scorsese. I'm not really sure. I guess he looks like Marty Scorsese a little bit.
Maybe. Maybe he's got the glasses.
949, here we go. 949 says for Joe Madden, Joe the Brilliant Madman. I do like Madman. There's something there for Joe Madden. Madman.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
He's kind of a madman.
Mm-hmm. I think you're going to get a lot of that, a lot of mad dog type things.
Yeah. All right, let's see. This one came in here. I'm going to skip that one. We've got some rainbow pictures. 773 says Pinky and the Brain for both of them. It's kind of good.
And because I don't get that one. The Brain. Theo?
Well, if you look, yeah, I guess like he's the brain, and then Pinky is the manager of the operation.
I'm not familiar with the...
I mean, it's a cartoon, the two of them. Like,
right, right.
I always get that confused with Ren and Stimpy.
Yeah,
it's Pinky and the Brain are the same concept.
Right, kind of surreal.
There's a little guy, and then there's a big guy.
Yeah.
That's all I know.
Okay. You know, there's someone, you mentioned this earlier, someone tweeted in the Juan Epstein from Welcome Back, Kotter.
That would be good, right?
You know, well, I don't know how much he'd want to... You know, whether he'd like that or
not. I mean,
that's
a hard one because it's like you try to keep it positive, so you really can't call him Juan Epstein. Hey, Juan Epstein. Like, that doesn't
And I was like, was he the one that said, up your nose with the rubber hose? That was Freddie Boom Boom Washington.
Oh, that
right?
was,
Or
yeah,
was that
yeah.
John Travolta? Who said up your nose with the rubber
Travolta
hose?
Travolta was, what? Who? Where? That's really dumb.
That's pretty good.
All right. Let's see. The Maestro. For Madden?
No. You could kind of say that for Theo, too, though, right?
Yeah, right, right, right. Captain Chemistry? I like that.
Oh, here's something else for Theo that people might want to know. Theo's great uncle and his grandfather won the screenplay for they won the Oscar for the screenplay to Casablanca.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Wow.
So, you know, maybe there's some Casablanca tie in there.
Yeah, here we go. Epstein could be Mr. Cotter. Mr. Cotter.
Mr. Cotter.
That's what he would do, right? Mr. Cotter. So if you call him Mr. Cotter, that would work if you were in the... I always like to put us in a spot where you're at Wrigley Field, you're kind of the smart aleck guy,
mm-hmm.
and you go, come on, Mr. Cotter. And they go, what's that mean? Epstein and Mr. Cotter, welcome back. And they go, you're brilliant.
Yeah.
You're so great.
People are buying you beers.
Yeah, and they're like, this guy needs to
come
be here every
sit
week.
Down in the front row.
Right, he comes so in the front. That's what I think about, but you need to be ready for.
Yeah.
The Madstermind, Joe Madden, 847. I don't know about that one. The Genius for Madden. Yeah.
I've got some for Madden here. We're just kind of going back and forth between Madden and Epstein.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because I've got a bunch for Madden.
Okay. Hold on before you go. Yeah, let's take a quick break since it's already a little bit after, and we'll come back. We'll do some Maddens. There's some really great stuff here. Keep them coming. 312-981-7200. Stay with us. Right. It's a download here. It's Picnic. We're giving authentic, legitimate nicknames to the 2016 Chicago Cubs team. Tonight, manager Joe Madden and general manager Theo Epstein. Sound good? All right, let's get going. Let's go to Rich, who's on the line. Rich, what do you got for Joe Madden?
For Joe Madden, I'd call him the Cubs Whisperer because he took that. Because he's like a horse whisperer. You know, he took a team that wasn't very good last year all the way into the playoffs. So
we'll call him the Whisperer.
Right.
It's good.
Yeah,
I like that.
Work.
All right. That's good. That's good, Rich. Thanks, man.
Right. Have a good evening.
Yeah, you too, man. You too. All right. That's pretty good. I like that.
Yeah.
705 says Joe Madden, the Rig Leader. Like Wrigley
Field.
Yeah, Rig Leader.
Mm-hmm.
Joel Reese, by the way, in studio with us.
Yeah. Hey.
How about Palooka Joe, Captain Cub, the Cubductor? Ooh.
That's pretty good.
I'm writing that one down, the Cubductor. And they also have the Cub Whisperer. Mm-hmm. So everyone likes that one.
I've got a bunch for him. I hit up the other writers at BP Wrigleyville.
Okay,
and
great.
I got a bunch here. So you've got the hipster Herzog, because, you know, he's kind of a hip guy, and he looks a little bit like Whitey Herzog. Yeah, so there's that. Another guy on at BP Wrigleyville, Ryan Davis, came up with the sapient skipper. I didn't even know what sapient means. I thought that was – I just know that as the ad agency. But
yeah.
it means wise, which I didn't even know. But then we kind of stumbled upon a gold mine because he loves wine. And so when Theo and Jed went down to woo him, apparently the big thing is they brought him some Pinot Noir. So we went with Professor Pinot, Captain Cabernet, the Syrah Soothsayer. And then my favorite was the Zinfandel Zen Master.
All right.
So that was my favorite.
I like hipster Herzog. That's,
yeah, you like that one?
That's pretty good. Beat Joe Madden. How about BA for batting average?
Yeah.
It really is. I do like this one. 847, Joe Madden, Huggy Bear. He's cool, just like the character from Starsky and Hutch.
Yeah. Well, you get points for Starsky and Hutch reference right off the bat.
Yeah.
Right?
I do think there's something there because Huggy Bear, he did the announcement at the Cubby Bear. Mm-hmm. Maybe there's something there.
Maybe.
Maybe. All right. Let me go back to the text here. Let's go... back nine, Matt Klein. He's got a lot of good ones. He sent me probably 65 texts.
Wow.
And they're all hilarious.
Okay.
Ready? Theosporin. To help heal those century-old wounds.
Okay.
Theosporin.
Whoa. You like that one.
Stonewall. All right.
What?
I don't know what that's... Teddy Baseball. Theo De Niro. That's it. Theo Winero. Theostatra for Cleopatra. Darth Trader. FEMA.
Oh. Wait.
Joe DiManaggio. He's really, really getting in here.
Man, he's like
really
working it.
Grass Joe, play on Glass Joe from Mike Tyson Punch Out.
Uh-huh. That's a good one.
Theo, you can call him Metro. He play on Metrosexual. Hmm. Metro. I might throw that one on there. There's a lot of good stuff here. 773 says, how about Mad Bad Madden? 734, the mixologist.
That's pretty good.
Because he mixes up
the
lineups.
Yeah, that's pretty good. I like that one.
Okay. What are you thinking, Pete? What do you got tonight? You can check it out.
He's like, what?
He's got a lot. And we got to get to Martyr here. I have a feeling he's got he's been thinking about this.
I have. The wheels have been turning.
In fact, I have put
news on the back burner for the rest of the evening because I've really been looking forward to this. Look, you know how I like to dig deep, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. You can call Joe Madden either the plumber.
Got it.
And you can, you know, reference maybe, you know, he flushes out the teams, gets the pipes working.
All right.
Sure. Not only that, but his dad was a plumber.
Oh, there you
His dad was a plumber. Or you can call him the Leopard.
The Leopard. I like this.
Yeah, the Leopard.
Spots.
Joe Madden went to Lafayette College in Easton, Pennsylvania.
And they're called,
The Leopards.
So there you go.
So you can call him the Leopard.
And if you can work in something with spots, then...
Spot starts, you know, like he gives Tommy LaStella
a spot start.
Clever, crafty cat.
Adam Warren gave him a spot start.
Right.
King of the Jungle sort of thing.
A lot of Coach Madden tonight. Not as much Theo.
Yeah.
Mad Joe Risen. That's 630. Just said Mad Joe Risen.
Like that.
Oh, that's cute.
I like that
one, yeah.
That's good.
Yeah, we need to come up with some Theos. Roster Farian. That's good stuff. Killer Joe. That's always good.
Yeah.
All right. So we're getting a lot of Joe Madden. Pete Zimmerman. What do you think? I mean, we obviously have to make a transition to Theo here. We're getting a ton of Joe Maddens. What other?
Well, I think that another thing about Joe is that he, besides, you know, the antics, but the, you know, he loves wild animals because he always brings animals into the,
so the leopard works.
Yeah. And, he's a bicyclist, you know, he, an avid bicycler.
Oh, okay.
So the Schwinn, the Trek.
Trek The mountain bike.
Yeah.
The mountain lion.
The, yeah.
Mm-hmm. This is a really good one. It's 847 might have a winner here. Papa Smurf. Right? Very Papa Smurf. He's got the white beard, hair, and the white hair. Yeah, blue. He's older, wiser, creative, and fun, but respected by the players. And he's Cubby Blue through and through. That's pretty good.
Yeah, that's really good.
That's pretty good. Papa Smurf.
So who's going to decide?
That makes Theo Gargamel. Esmeralda decides.
Yeah, there we go.
We give her, we narrow it down. And then we give three to Esmeralda on both, you know. So we have a little bit of time before we do that. We're going to do that at the end of the hour. And tonight, if you do win, it was your idea that we picked for the nickname on Picnic, you get yourself a prize. We're giving away a Pequod's Pizza gift card and a MyPillow. Both of those things are going to go to the winners who give us Coach Madden's nickname and who gives us Theo Epstein's nickname. All right.
For Theo, how about King Midas?
Right.
Oh, because you got the,
King Midas, I'm writing it down.
Right.
Someone just said the Rainmaker for Theo.
Do that.
Mm-hmm. Let's go to Glenn right before we break here. Glenn, what do you got? What do you got for Theo
how
Epstein?
Doing?
How you doing?
How about Theo the Leo?
Theo the Leo. Very good. All right, I'll take that.
Got a ring to it.
Yeah, it rhymes.
It's animals.
Yeah, you know? It's animals. Just like, it's like leopard, Leo.
Who doesn't like animals?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay, thanks, Glenn. Glenn really thought that one through. He's got all of it. He kind of put it all together. Theo Almighty. All right, so we will take a break here with Picnic. We'll take a break. We'll get the news. We'll come back, and we will continue on Picnic. Stay with us. Shot, Chicago Cubs, baby. That's a good one. Beats by Zim. Bringing the heat tonight with the Cubs novelty songs. It's Picnic. The 2016 Chicago Cubs deserve authentic, legitimate nicknames, and that's what we're doing this summer. On the Download Wednesday nights, we choose a nickname for select players, staff, management, coaches. Tonight, manager Joe Madden, general manager Theo Epstein. In studio with me, Joel Reese. He's a writer at Baseball Prospectus Wrigleyville, also does the podcast, which you can find on Twitter at BP WrigleyCast. Joe, we've got a great, great bunch of nicknames for Joe Madden. Theo Epstein, we got to turn it on. We got to start directing ourselves to the Theo Epstein nicknames.
You know, he is actually not the general manager. People think that.
What is he, president?
He is the president of baseball operations. So maybe like something like the Prez or, the
Commander in chief.
There you go. But you want to have
chief
two. You want to have two meanings. You just one. You want to have kind of a dual meaning to Epstein. Give it some depth.
Epstein. Steen.
Steen. Joel Osteen, that weird motivational speaker guy.
Motivational weird.
The motivator.
The motivator. There was a motivator on here. 708 Shannon says EpiPen because he brought the Cubs back to life.
Oh, okay.
That's
pretty good.
That's right?
I'm wondering what Esmeralda is thinking. Esmeralda, do you have a something you're leaning toward at this point?
Not really.
She keeps it close to the vest.
She does. Yeah.
I need to hear more.
All right.
Here's
what we got coming in for Theo Epstein, the Halstead Hunk.
I don't think he lives on Halstead.
401 says for Theo Epstein, the Hebrew Hammer. That might be a tough one to. I don't know. It's too much about his religious background. So
I think I know where that one came from.
Okay. Let's see. Theo Baseball. How about Theo Baseball?
Because of like.
Yeah, I mean, you get that kind of like, that's a Johnny Baseball kind of thing.
Who was that? Was that Joey Bats? Is Jose Bautista. Who is someone baseball? Was that Joe DiMaggio?
Yeah, maybe. Joey Baseball. I don't know. I do like this one. Einstein for Epstein.
See, that's got two. He's smart, and it's got the name parallelism.
Yeah, exactly. All right, there's good stuff. Goat Slayer.
Oh, that's like a metal band.
Yeah.
Goat Slayer. I bet he'd like
that. He probably would like that, yeah.
He's a rocker, you know?
Yeah, right, right. All right, let's see here. For 331 says Master Madden, like Yoda.
Oh, Master Madden.
No.
That's pretty good.
918 says Theo for Theo Epson, the Theocrat. Mm-hmm. I like that. Theocrat.
Theocracy.
The Archbishop of Baseball, the Biz Kid. Theosaurus Rex.
That's pretty good.
These are pretty good. These are great coming in. Tonight, people are bringing it. Ted Williams was Teddy Baseball.
Ted, there you go.
Yeah.
Yeah.
847, timely for tonight. We had the conversation with Jesse Klein. Epidural for Theo Epstein.
That's, I guess, the epi. Yeah.
Takes the pain away. All right, Pete. You haven't had a chance to weigh in here, and I want to get you in for Theo Epstein. What are some things about Theo that you think that we should be?
Well, like Joel mentioned, yeah, and we mentioned earlier, he does that big hot stove, cool music thing that takes place a couple of times a year. Big fan. I think he's friends with Eddie Vedder because Eddie Vedder always shows up to that thing.
Mm-hmm. Gosh, man, Pearl Jam's got their hooks in the Cubs.
Yeah.
Didn't you say Hamill was a huge Pearl Jam guy?
Yeah, Hamill's a Pearl Jam fan.
We ended up
as well.
Giving him a ham jam, one, because of his fandom of Pearl Jam, and that now Theo Epstein and Eddie Vedder.
And do you remember when there were the rumors that Theo was going to come over to the Cubs, and most people knew it, but then that like one random person saw him in the Starbucks. And it was like, oh yeah, like took a picture of Theo at the Starbucks.
Yeah, that was
like an Armitage and Webster.
I guess that was actually. That was him, and he was like,
yeah.
And he the guy didn't the guy say, "Are you the outside?" He's like, "Oh no, I get that all the time," but it actually was.
Yeah,
that's a quick so, like a good president lying in the first thing on the job.
Plays a guitar.
Yeah,
licks.
He's big into a band called Buffalo Tom. They're from Boston. I like them a lot. So
Klein likes Theo Cruxtable.
Wait, now, where does the crux come from? Because it was Huxtable.
Yeah, right.
But where does the crux come from?
I don't know. But, yeah.
Something.
It worked. It got a laugh. Let's go to Susan. Susan, what do we like? You got something for Joe and Theo?
Yes.
All right, what are we looking at?
Joe Madden, leader of the pack.
Okay.
And for Epstein, Fielder of Dreams.
Ooh.
That's not bad.
Fielder of Dreams.
I still think the best one that I heard was for Pedro Strop was Beef Stroopwafel. I think that win? Esmeralda?
That did not win. White Castle won that night.
Oh, because the
Thanks,
slider.
Susan.
Yeah,
sure.
Okay. Thank you. Yeah, the best slider in the house.
Yeah, that's...
Theo Fight. It's good. All right, there's a lot going in here. Okay, Snoopy. All right. Like Joe Cool.
Oh, yeah, Joe Cool, right.
Okay. Nickname for the Cubs, Madden Stein's Monster. Madden Stein's Monster, so like Frankenstein.
Frankenstein, yeah.
Theo the Lionhearted. Yeah.
When you just get the,
Yeah, we're not getting a ton of energy through these, you know? There's a lot of, like, Theo, we got to start bringing the heat on. And there's no doubt about it. I mean, we're coming up on another break here.
Yeah.
And after
on,
the break,
people,
we got to go. I mean, we got some good stuff, but I don't know. I feel like there needs to be a couple more that are like the unanimous choices.
Because
I think that we're going to get a winner out of Joe Madden. I know Esmeralda pretty well. But Theo Epstein's still up in the air.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
So we got to come up with some more here.
Okay, people.
Theo. Yeah.
Wait, no, he went to Yale, and they're the Bulldogs? Yeah.
Huh.
So.
630 just said baseball sucks.
That's
strong.
That's
that doesn't work. I don't get it.
That's good stuff.
I don't get it. All right, I'll comb through the text again, but this is your last shot to get in.
Okay,
we got some good ones coming in here. 312-981-7200 for your nicknames for Theo Epstein and Joe Madden. We'll take a break. We'll come back. We'll get those nicknames in the hopper, and then we will choose the picnic winners for tonight. Esmeralda will be the judge. Stay with us.
And when the Cubs go marching in, and when the comes gold marching in. I wanna be in the bleachers when the Cubs go marching in.
Nice.
Where does he get all those songs?
I don't know. That's a secret. It gets better as we get closer to the end of the season, too. Last year during the playoffs, as we got closer, the novelty Cubs songs were off the chain.
It's amazing.
So good.
Wow.
Beats by Zim. Joel Reese, BP Prospectus, Wrigleyville.
Mm-hmm.
Also, the podcast at BP Wrigleycast on Twitter.
Mm-hmm.
We're doing Joe Madden and Theo Epstein. We got some great stuff here. Let's keep going. We were talking about him. You know, we heard Texters did the Architect.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're like, well, maybe there's a playoff of Frank Lloyd Wright.
Frank Lloyd Wright Field.
Yeah.
That's a little long, though. Yeah. That's four words. That's, you know.
I like Mies van der Theo.
That's pretty good.
Or even better.
Yeah.
Vies Mander. Vies.
Wait.
Mies van der Bro.
Yeah.
That's it.
That's a good Mies one.
Mies van der Bro.
Yeah, that's
that's
a good
the one.
One
that I would put in.
Yeah.
920 Theo the Mother Epstein. That's a little weird.
What? His
nickname is the Mother.
I don't know if I
can. Team Tesla. Theo's Team Tesla. Triple T. All right. Hmm. For Madden, we've got Mojo. Oh. 773 like Sweet Tea. For
oh,
Theo Epstein.
Epstein, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Sweet T.E. Theo
mm-hmm.
Epstein.
Mm-hmm.
Hmm. Let's see. We else we have Theo the Great. Yeah. Hmm. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. What do we like? Theo the Cub Piper. The Piper. Okay.
Pied Piper type thing.
Let's go to Steve on the line. Steve, what do you got, Steve, for Theo Epstein?
Hi.
Hi.
Theo Man, Avenger of the Cubbyverse.
I kind of like that, Theo Man. That would be better if it's
The
Man.
The Man of Theo, like Man of Steel. Maybe there's something there.
Yeah, I like that. Thanks, Steve. Yeah. That's a good one. Thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you, guys.
Thank
you. Have a good day.
You too.
Thanks.
Theo Man. There you go. The Sorcerer. Ooh.
Doctor Strange, remember that?
Yeah, of course. That's a nice little. That's a movie coming out with Doctor Strange.
Oh, do they?
Yeah.
Who's playing him?
Oh, geez, it's next year. I saw a trailer for it. It's Marvel, right?
Yeah.
Who is playing Doctor Strange? That's a great question. Someone will definitely tell us. All right. So I think we've got our picks here. There's a lot. I'm going to read them down, okay?
Okay.
And then we'll start with you, Joel. And then, Pete, I want you to get in on this as well, okay? On the Coach Madden side, we've got Madman, Maestro, Captain Chemistry, Madstermind, The Genius, The Whisperer, The Cub Whisperer, Cubductor, Hipster Herzog. Love that one. Professor Pino, Huggy Bear, The Mixologist, Killer,
yeah.
The Plumber, The Leopard, Mad Joe Risen, Papa Smurf, Hannibal, and Leader of the Pack.
Hannibal? I hadn't heard that one.
Yeah. Someone had Hannibal for the A-Team.
Oh, okay.
Like he's the Not guy. Like he's Hannibal, like, I love it when a plan comes together.
Yeah, George Peppard.
Yeah. So when you hear those, what do you like? What grabs your attention out of that?
I like the Mixologist.
Yeah.
Captain something, what was it?
Captain Chemistry?
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
What do you like?
I like Mixologist as well. I like mm-hmm. Hipster Herzog. I like Huggy Bear, and I like Papa Smurf. I think that's one of my favorites, Papa Smurf. That kind of is perfect. You really think about it.
You know, my mom is listening from Door County on her phone, and she texted me and said she liked Papa Smurf best.
There you go. See?
So,
Joel's mom.
Yeah, that's the...
Says Papa Smurf.
That's the ultimate endorsement right there.
All right. So, Pete Zimmerman, you heard that list. What do you like here? We've got Madman, Maestro, Captain Chemistry, Genius, The Whisperer, Cubductor, Professor Pino, Huggy Bear, The Mixologist, the plumber, the leopard, Mad Joe Rison, Papa Smurf, or leader of the pack?
I like Pino, Professor Pino, the mm-hmm. best, but then mixologist, because I like the idea of the wine, and you know, mixologist, you can kind of, that's yeah, alcohol
maybe
related.
Knows, at least he knows wine, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then Papa Smurf, too. I enjoy that one. And, of course, Hipster Herzog is that's fantastic. But, you know, like when Joe's going out there, you can't really say Hipster Herzog.
There he is. Plus, come on, Hipster Herzog.
Don't like
Werner Herzog? No, the Herzog. Whitey Herzog.
You don't like to associate any cub with a cardinal either. Yeah, so
That's a good one.
Point.
All right, let me stay with you, Pete, and let's do Theo Epstein. Ready? Mr. Carter, Metro, Rainmaker, King Midas, Theo the Leo, Einstein, the Goat Slayer, Theocrat, the Architect, Sweet Tea, Theo Man, or Mies van der Broe, which is mine, so that doesn't really
count. That's pretty funny, though.
I think out of those, I like the Architect still, or the Goat Slayer, just because it's fun to say.
That's
the Goat Slayer.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I also somebody just texted, did you do the monsoon? Did you have that in there?
Oh, the monsoon.
The anti-drought.
Ooh.
That's pretty good, I think.
That is good.
Well, we got to wait till October to see that, right?
Yeah,
that's true. Yeah.
Yeah.
It may be out of the playoffs after the...
We're going to have to put this on hold for 2017,
yeah.
The way they're playing right now.
Right. Wow.
All right, so I will pick four from each category to give to Esmeralda, who's been locked up in the soundproof chamber.
Yeah.
The soundproof closet. It's a lot like the end of Family Feud, except we forgot to do it. So, Esmeralda, okay, so I've got a list of stuff here. How are you doing tonight?
I'm good.
Yeah? Are you ready?
Yeah.
You feel pressure?
No.
Okay.
No pressure.
None at all.
None at all. Good. There's a lot of people riding out there. I mean, think about it. They could get a free...
Yeah,
could get a gift card from Pequod's Pizza featuring the world-famous pizza with a signature caramelized crust. Visit them in Chicago or Morton Grove or online at pequodspizza.com or a MyPillow. Guarantee the most comfortable pillow you'll ever own. Visit MyPillow.com. So there's a lot riding here.
If it's meant to be, it's meant to be.
Wow. She's getting all zen.
There you go. It's Benedict Cumberbatch's Doctor Strange.
Yeah, I saw that.
So there we go. All right. You ready for this? For Coach Joe Madden, we've got Captain Chemistry, Huggy Bear, the Mixologist, or Papa Smurf. Once again, Captain Chemistry, Huggy Bear, the Mixologist, or Papa Smurf.
I have to go with Papa Smurf.
Papa Smurf.
I have to go with that one.
I agree, right?
I mean,
that's a winner. That's a no-brainer.
And then people can Photoshop him
yes.
blue and then wearing
and
the Papa
exactly,
Smurf
exactly. And when he comes out to the mound and be like...
Is that their song?
I don't know if that's... It's close. I think that was more...
That's
what you, yeah.
Kind
what's
of
the Smurfs
Irish
one?
Song, but.
What's the Smurf?
There
it is. Thank you.
I didn't know they had a song.
Yep. What are you talking about, Joel?
Sorry, man.
Martyr with the wind.
Get out of here.
The 6 and a 5 year old.
Yeah. Exactly. And when he comes out and they're like, oh, that's going to be it for Arietta. I don't think we've been more right in any of the
really
nicknames.
Fun,
I really like this one. Okay. Papa Smurf for Joe Madden. All right. Let's go to Theo Epstein. This one's going to be a little tougher, okay? It's up in the air. Let's go with King Midas, Einstein, the Goat Slayer, or the Architect. I took mine out. Mies van der Broe. Didn't make the hit.
Hold on to that one. Hold it dear.
I'm gonna try that one rogue.
Dear to your heart.
I'm gonna go rogue next time I go to Wrigley. Where's Mies van der Broe? Who's that? Theo Epstein. They're like, you're brilliant.
Yeah.
You should be here all the time.
In the front row. You should be on the TV.
King Midas, Einstein, the Goat Slayer, or Architect.
I like King Midas.
Listen to this.
Ooh, surprise.
There you go. Mark Tier likes it. There you go. King Midas.
Thank you.
The Midas touch.
Thank you.
And there is a play. Well, it was maybe it was CarX, but didn't Midas do a bunch of ads for the old Cubs games? Midas or Don't Worry, called the CarX, man. Rattle, rattle, thunder, clatter, boom, boom,
but
boom.
But that's CarX. That's
yeah, but it's close enough. I mean, it's
I'm
thing,
sure
right?
they think, I'm that's sure they look the at it that way, too.
Esmeralda comes through tonight. Theo Epstein is now King Midas. And Coach Madden, Joe Madden, is Papa Smurf. Thanks to all the plays. Joe Reese, congratulations for helping someone get a gift card and a MyPillow.
It's all in the day's work.
Joel Reese, BP Prospectus, Wrigleyville. He's also does the podcast, which you can find on Twitter at BP WrigleyCast. Thanks for coming down tonight.
Sure.
And thanks you for playing. That's going to do it tonight here on The Download. Coming up tomorrow, the good stuff tomorrow, Shamir's going to be on. Great new artist who's going to be playing Pitchfork. With Shamir. Also, we'll do Swap Meet with Greg Flamm tomorrow night. Very excited to evaluate your Chicago memorabilia, your Chicago junk. It's always a fun segment. So that's coming up tomorrow here on The Download. This is Chicago's very own 720 WGN Chicago and WGNRadio.com. Coming up, Patty Vasquez. Pretty late with Patty Vasquez here on 720 WGN. There's the bell. Thanks for listening. I hope you are dry, and we'll give it to Mr. Martyrs.